eine Wiggly-Welt 115.
It's never straight up and down.
A Wiggly World. Hello! Hello, everyone. I'm opening the mic today. I don't know if my voice is going to cooperate with the show today, but nonetheless, here I am. I have a little bit of sinus something happening. I don't know. Hopefully, it is not too annoying, although many people find my voice annoying. To begin with, others find it incredibly soothing and to love. Friends, it's been a while since I got behind a microphone, and goodness knows, goodness does, you see, that I have tried and attempted and thought about things. I have nothing. I have zero before me. I have absolutely nothing in front of me, and yet I am opening the mic, and I have about, I honestly think it's a gabillion, it's a lot. I have a bazillion things to discuss, and yet I have no idea where to start, where to begin. No format. Free ball on Friday. This is Friday. I was supposed to do this on, I was supposed to do it yesterday. Then I was supposed to do it the day before yesterday, and then I was supposed to do it 2 days before yesterday, and the 3 days before yesterday. And I was even thinking about doing it over the weekend, and none of them happened. And so on for the past several weeks. But, and it is a big but, this is completely underground radio. I am in like 18 layers of clothing. I have a scarf. I don't have a scarf. I have a hat. I'm wearing gloves. It's very cold in the trapdoor chicken coop. My line input seems a little hot. Looking just in system preferences, not in my Wiretap Pro, but just in my system preferences. But, you know, I'll keep an eye on that. We'll see what happens. I have been doing a lot of recording. Yesterday we did a go-go, some go-go shoots. I have two interviews in the can for the next We Talk Games. Others are planned. And this is how bad it's been. I haven't even been able to email my call. Like, we were supposed to record all the We Talk Games this past week. Now it's already Friday. And I didn't even get to, like, email my co-host to tell them that I wanted to email this past, that I wanted to record this past week. My co-hosts, not the correspondence, not the anything else. Just, it's been so, so busy here. And already today, just trying to sit down and do this today, I'm at least 3 hours past when I wanted to get started. My tech job has been very demanding of me, very, very demanding, and it's not necessarily equating to big paychecks, although the extra help is incredibly appreciated. But it's like it interrupts in the middle of things and puts my brain in a bad place for trying to sit down and be creative, because, you know, I get very analytical and very... it's just a completely different mindset when you're trying to, when you're a sole technician operating a company that has more servers than the last call center I worked at, which had thousands of seats. And it's a completely open environment at my tech job. In other words, everybody is an administrator of their own machine. Now, if you want a smooth running operation, like at when I worked as an IT administrator for T-Mobile, the first thing you do is lock it down, lock everything down. If you want little to zero downtime, impact on production, you lock the system down and only allow access to things that are needed to get the job done. And of course, then it would be, you know, opened up, whatever we had to do to make steps. But it was a very, very monitored and locked down work environment. And I was responsible for building many of the early NT4 lockdown systems and the standardized desktop, which took our trouble tickets down from like 20 a day at some points to one or two every 4 or 5 days. That's how much of an impact implementing a lockdown NT4 desktop environment, standardized desktop environment, was. And people have roaming profiles, so they could sit anywhere if their machine was down. And very little downtime. Then when we switched to XP, and now I guess they're probably at tinkering with Vista or Windows 7, something of that nature. I'm sure, you know, they're still just as locked down. And I mean, even our technicians, our tech support people that were on the floor, not the IT people, but the tech support people for the phones, they even had lockdown desktops. There was nobody really that was an exception for a lockdown desktop. Now, this new tech job, where I work for an advertising agency, they have a completely open environment. It's a mixed, it's a heterogeneous environment, which is has Macs, PCs, and even a couple of Linux boxes. And I have Mac servers, I have Windows servers, mostly 2003 actually. All 2003 that are important servers. And then I have OS 10 server and OS 10.5, OS 10.6, and a very old OS 10.4 server as well. So I got my hands full, and I have two Ubuntu servers, which are little development areas, and you know, we run a couple websites, cron jobs, and things like this, kick some emails out. But it's completely open, and I'm just the sole consultant. I am completely independent. I do not work for them, but they are my client, and that's what I do. So I charge by the 15 minutes, and they pay me well. But I'm only getting paid about a third of what my lowest rate should be. People that do my job, I've seen it in the advertisements already. They charge somewhere around $109 an hour. Now, I would never be able to charge $109 an hour. I wouldn't have any clients, number one. And it just would be bad because I am not the type of person that wants to get certified in A through Z. I have no use for certifications. I think that, you know, that's fine. People look for that. That tells an employer that you've gone through and taken tests. And that's supposed to equate to being a good technician. And to me, that equates to being good at taking tests. I will never take a test. I'll take all the courses, I'll take all the classes, but I will not be certified in anything, as far as I know. Unless somebody pays for the entire thing, then I may change my mind. But I'm not going to pay, you know, $5,000-$6,000, several thousand dollars for some classes, I guess. To go and take a test that I hate the structure of these tests, and I'm completely against them. And then, honestly, it's like an employer asking for you to have a degree in computer science when they want you to build a web page for them. You know, the two things really have little to do with one another. But I'm very happy for where I am, and I do have a pretty stable environment. Although lately, it's just been a little crazy, and it's mostly relating to trouble with one of my older virtual, one of my virtual servers. I was just having a problem with snapshots and not compressing properly and things like this. So very, very low-level technical stuff. And also people installing the viruses, you know. I have virus software, but it's only so good. If you really want to install a virus, you can do it quite easily by getting, you know, duped into thinking that your computer is at risk. Click to install, and all these other type of goofy things that occur. And plus, people just filling up their hard drives and just a lot of, you know, other silly things. Plus, we've just did a whole renovation and upgrade. So I upgraded all of our Macs to 10.5, and they also got the new Creative Suite CS4. And because everything that was on these systems is well over 5 years old, we ran into a lot of problems, especially with font issues. So we had to completely, because the font server was never kept up with, we missed out on upgrades that would have worked with OS 10.5. And when I implemented a test machine, people were supposed to be banging on this, and no issues were found. So I blow it out to the entire company, and then all of a sudden we have font problems. So I had to quickly recommend a new font server, and we're going with Universal Type Server and Client, just the standard edition, no need for the pro. Tech talk, nobody cares about tech talk. Boop boopy doo. And we talk games front. Like I mentioned, two interviews in the can. One guy, probably someone you never thought we'd have on the show. And you might even be familiar with him if you're a young kid into the games. And he's just a gaming personality. He's never developed a game, as far as I know. Did have a small background in journalism, video game journalism, but that's about it. And also, we're going to have on a really, really cool cat that he is an independent game developer, and he's being sought out by larger companies now. He's been a consultant for EA as well, but he's completely independent. One person game developer, designer, philosopher, if you will. Young kid, very bohemian lifestyle, and I look forward to talking to him and having you listen to that on the next We Talk Games. I hope to get that out next week. I'm trying to think back on what I said on this month, on this Monday's Go-Go. Oh, I hope I didn't mention him on this Monday's Go. I might have. It doesn't matter. It's just that it's not going to be ready by Monday. Speaking about different things with the Go-Go and different things in the Wiggly Trapdoor Chicken Coop, and I hope that you don't mind me riffing on what's new in my immediate circle of life here, besides being 50 degrees inside my section of the coop. The other parts are all closed off. And, you know, these are all things that have to be going on. The last time I tried to sit down and do a Wiggly World, I needed to heat my chizzy. I needed to heat my wife, my family, and I did an interview in the morning, and then that was Tuesday. I did an interview in the morning, and then try to figure out how he's going to heat this place. Because there's no heat. There's no heat in the trapdoor chicken coop. There's no running water. I have a water machine with a, you know, like one of these water, I don't know, what do you call them? Water fountain. What do you call these things? Water tank. Water cooler. There you go. But it also does heat. So it does heat, room temperature, and cold, and then it has a mini fridge below it. And I do have a full fridge at the other end of the board bar, blah, and sniffle. But I do, but that's unplugged right now because there's no need to be running three fridges for Chiz and I at this time. So we have that. So we could have water, we could have hot tea, immediate hot tea. It's lovely. We can have instant coffee. I think we got some sort of instant coffee that's actually pretty good. Let me recommend that to you. Yes, believe it or not, I know I've tried a lot of instant coffees, and they've always been pretty bad. And as a matter of fact, one of the worst is probably the coffee imitators that are made with wheat and things like this. But actually, this is kind of unusual, and I can't believe I'm actually recommending this, but Nescafe, Taster's Choice, has a vanilla that naturally and artificially flavored, I'm sure it's got some things in it that I shouldn't have. But this gourmet, it's their gourmet series, and it's a 20 single-serve packets. They're little things that look like, they're very rectangular. They're very long. They look like a half a straw or something. And then you pour that in hot water. And it's actually not bad. And I'm, like I said, very critical of instant coffees. Nescafe, Taster's Choice. Gourmet, the Gourmet series. Give it a try if you want some coffee on the go. In fact, I think I'm going to make myself one, try to help my throat out here. Now, let's see here.
Oh.
What? Who wouldn't need a cup? You can pour it in your mouth like a pick stick. It's very good. And scene. Thank you. I'm available for all your holiday parties, everyone. Hire me. I'm cheap. $200, I think. $200. I'll come to your party and do whatever. Now, of course, I also, you know, lodging within reason and transportation. $200. Anything. I'll talk. I'll sing. I'll dance. I'll, read to you. Although, it better be short because I have a hard time reading and I'm very slow. So, thank you once again for joining into a Wiggly World. I have no idea where I'm at. Instant coffee, all of a sudden I'm talking about. Oh, yes, it's chilly. We have no running water. We have no... So, you know, we can't go poo-poo or pee-pee over here because there's no toilet. We have to go across a yard and then down into the basement of another home. And that's where our kitchen and our toilet and shower and sink and stuff like that are all over down there, and it's, you know, it's fine. I try to spruce it up, try to make it as nice as possible, paint it the bathroom, the colors that didn't make you throw up, and some of those are available on my Facebook. And the kitchen is, it's okay. It's not great, but we put in some new lighting down there that we can also take with us, a floor lamp that is very festive and colorful and fun. But, it gets to be a drag, but we get to commune with nature on a daily basis, several times a day, walking, wearing a path in the grass out. So we, Chiz and I, are looking for homes. But we have no heat over here, and so I was looking in new kerosene heaters. I wanted to make sure if I was going to go with kerosene, because I looked at different things, pellet heaters, and they would all be good, but they're all around, I think, for me to put in some type of pellet stove or coal stove or wood stove would probably end up running me, I don't know, $1,500, $1,600, $1,700 till I got everything installed. And that's not the type of investment I want to put out right now, being that we are looking for homes. And believe me, me saying I'm looking for a home is incredibly humorous, because you know me, I'm... I'm not that well off, although I'm a lot more well off this year. Starting last year, the last quarter, I did actually pretty good because of this part-time tech job. If you don't know me, and even if you do know me, I have not disclosed this before, except to those very, very close to me. And now I am not ashamed. I'm still ashamed, but I'm actually going to admit this to everyone. 2 years ago, and this is because I had when we applied for a mortgage and met with our mortgage broker, and this is very important, and completely out of place, because now I'm going to start talking about mortgages instead of talking about the heater, and instead of talking about Jesus, and instead of talking about enlightenment and the path to knowing the secret of life and things like this. So I'm getting sidetracked. Well, let me finish with the heat. So I don't want to make that big type of investment. So I looked around for what would be a good idea, and I figured, okay, well, I'll go with the kerosene again. I used to use kerosene to heat this place, you know, for the past however many years I've lived here. And I want to make sure I have a long, very tall glass chimney. This allows more of the carbon to be burned off and stuff like that before, so it doesn't stink as much and it's not as bad for you. But I ended up looking around. They did not have the exact kerosene heater in the three places I looked. That they did not have the kerosene heater I wanted that was of the quality that I thought would be okay for in here. And believe me, I go and get the kerosene. I do all that. I wouldn't make Chiz do any of that. And I would set it up, show her how to use it, and be very safe with it. And I've never had any problem with... I've been using kerosene heaters since I was a teenager, so I've never had any problems with any of my heaters, although some were far more smelly than others. And, you know, usually you have to run an air purifier and things like this. So what I settled on was a one electric radiator, made sure that they all had digital thermostats. They all had the, and listen, they don't, the thermostats don't need to be able to tell the exact temperature and things like this. I've learned this over the years of dealing with various little non-pre-installed home heating elements. You just need to make sure that you have something that you could turn a knob to the desired temperature that you wanted in the room, and then when that heater reaches that temperature, it shuts off. So I got one of these electric radiators. It works very well. It's supposed to be energy efficient and all this other business. But it does have a thermostat that works, and it does have the ability to set on and off timers to an A and B on and off timer. So this is great. So, you know, you set one to turn on and off before you get home from work and after you go to bed, and then you set one to turn on before you wake up and after you leave for work. So now you can have an A and B timer going simultaneously, so this thing isn't on all day. You know, because it is a radiator that does not have any type of fan built in, it's not moving air around, you want to start heating up the room at least an hour before you get into it. And the very nice thing is I've segmented my chicken coop. There is a door that separates Chiz's bedroom from our living room. Well, and my bedroom too, but it's more like Chiz's room. There's a door that separates those two. And then I have a curtain that separates my giant chicken coop studio combo bar karaoke center and media storage. This is in complete cold. and that's why I'm bundled up. So I do have the three rooms separate. And then in Chizzy's room, my bedroom as well, I picked up an electric floor, sort of like a floorboard radiator, floorboard electric heater like you would normally see in floorboards that would be electric. Except this one is also very energy efficient, and it does a great job of heating up the room. And the great thing about both of them is that it's that they're quiet. Now, the electric floorboard one does make a ting, ping, ping, pong, pong, ting tongs when it does a dramatic temperature change and things like this. But the oil filled electric radiator, not a peep out of there. So it's really, you know, nice to not hear these fans go constantly. So that's how I decided to heat our winter adventure. And believe me, it has been getting very chilly around here. We had a snowfall the other day on Chizzy's birthday, and it's been a mess. Chizzy had a very nice birthday as well. She was very happy with it. I'm glad. We went to Sibs in the morning for breakfast, and then her parents, it was too snowy for them to get out of their park that they live in, so, or the area they live in. It's not really a park, it's a community type thing, I don't know what you call it, village or whatever. So they ended up coming over later in the day, when, and my mom came over as well, so it was very nice. And I picked up cupcakes for us, some gourmet ones at the Wegmans, and they were delicious. The gourmet ones were $1.75 a piece. So I only picked up a few of those. And then I picked up another thing, which was still expensive. It was like $5 for, four. I think that's what it is. And that was still expensive. But the gourmet ones, the $1.75 ones a piece, boy, you could tell the difference. It was like night and day between that and the packaged deals. And I got to tell you, who really cares? So that's that. Now, the mortgage. So we're looking for a home. So here's the embarrassing thing. I had to get out my tax forms for the past 2 years. This is something I never told anybody. 2 years ago, I made my taxable income was $800 for the entire year. $800. That's right. Not for the week. Not for 2 weeks. Not for the month. For 12 months, my taxable income was $800. If you wonder why, I was, you know, always asking for, and even at this point, was I still sharing what I was making off of the media I would release on a monthly basis. Not in the early. In the early days, when I first started and first went full hardcore into it, you know, I needed to try to live. Like I said, $800 the entire year. Now, as you know, running the shows costs far more than $800. This was my taxable income. So this did not, I guess, you know, however that's figured out by income tax, whatever. But that was my taxable income for the entire year. And so I don't lie. This year will be a whole lot better. I still don't make, you know, zillions of dollars. I still don't make, I don't make $50,000. I don't make $40,000. I don't know what my earnings will be for this past year, but it will be considerably less than I was a guy making probably around 70 grand a year before I tried to make a go at art and make a go with the podcasting. Now, I was sort of, I didn't just say, I'm quitting my job. I'm going to just take a chance. No, I got laid off, and then I was doing some consulting for a firm. And then I started doing podcasting while I was doing this other consulting job, which didn't pay as much and was sporadic. And then they stopped getting jobs for me. So, because I don't know if I was particular, but I mean, people wanted me to do artwork things. I can't do artwork for a company. I just can't. I'm not that type of art. I've tried. And what ends up happening is I want to punch them or they want to punch me because I just can't. I can take direction very well. I'm very good at taking direction. I am not good at all at taking correction. And that's just the type of artist I am. I do it. I do everything to the best of my ability, as good as I am able to do it. And like I said, I can take direction. If someone gives me a direction to go, I will go that direction. But I'm not so good. I'm very bad at taking correction once the piece is completed because I already put everything I had into it. There's very little, I think, that I can improve on or change or modify on something that I really put my artistic input into. I mean, it's different if I didn't put everything I had into it. But if I really made it my own, then it's hard for me to take correction on it. So that's why, you know, I really can't work for other people doing artwork. I need to do my own thing or do a job that is purely technical or whatever. You know, then I don't have any finesse in it. I mean, I have my own style as a technician, but you know, getting it to work, that's my main goal, and whatever means necessary to make it work, that is what I will do. This is the first time I've had to really sit down since I think we got back from vacation. I've watched a lot of good television as well, and I'll get into that, I hope. And I hope I get into a little bit of Jesus. I really miss talking about the good old Lord there. Found out a lot about our buddy, Yeshua. So I'd like to, you know, do some speaking on him. Now, I'm not going to get very technical. I'm not going to do that. And I also want to talk about, UFO hunters. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, this whole ghost hunter business. Oh, boy, these hunters are terrible. Number one, if they're hunters, they need to hang up their rifles and shotguns because they're terrible. They should be trying to be firemen or something else instead because they are lousy hunters. Taster's choice. Actually, not that good at all. So we went and applied for a mortgage, and things have changed since 5 years ago when we applied. When we applied 5 years ago for a mortgage, of course, we were approved for $350,000, $375,000 home, something like that, because I was still making good money. Chiz was making good money. Now, not as much, but we were approved for $211,000 home. That is nothing. That is, we will not move into anything that expensive. We are looking for something in the 100 to 124 range, period. Because there's no way we would be able to afford what our mortgage broker has approved us for. Now, our mortgage broker was a pretty cool guy. He's very good. This is all like friends of the family. Like we know a real estate agent that's been a friend of Chizzy's family since she was in diapers. So, you know, this is all friendship. A lot of things, little to no commission, pardon me, burps. And by the way, little to no commission on all this business. And we get to pick out, you know, homes on the website, and before we go and look at them, we do a drive-by as well, and then Donna will take us in to look at the homes. We've looked at quite a few homes. There was one home I absolutely loved, but the taxes per year would have been $7,000 per year. $7,000 probably doesn't seem like a whole lot when you're talking about homes. But that's extra just in taxes. That is, you know, $600 a month, near $600 a month extra on top of your mortgage and everything else. So, you know, we couldn't afford that. And it's so sad because it was great. Now, why does it cost $7,000 in Bethlehem, Allentown, Easton? That's not what the taxes are around here. Now, if you lived in California, yes, for a little home, $10,000 is nothing to blink an eye at. But around here, you should be looking between $2,000 and $4,000, like tops, per year. So why was it $7,000? Because it was a huge, like, sort of halfway house. It had 7 bedrooms. It had 2 parlors, and it was hard to read, either 1 kitchen or 2 kitchens. And now, you know, of course, we wouldn't be able to heat that behemoth or do anything else. We would close off rooms, but it would be perfect exactly for what I need. Now, I also rent a space, and I have for the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years, 4 trapdoor to practice where we shoot the go-go's. Now, that's only $175 a month. But if we would have gotten this place that was, you know, too big for us to afford the taxes, it was a beautiful place in Allentown. Really reminded me of my granny and grandpa's up in Colt Mount, which that's, you know, it was a gorgeous house. It had a little yard and everything. It wasn't in the best neighborhood. It's not in the best neighborhood, but I still would feel completely safe for Chiz to live there, Chiz and I to live there. We could have, you know, a dance room. We could have the studio, the video studio, and the my audio studio. Plenty of room for my media storage and everything else. So those 7 rooms would be mostly closed up, not heated, not climate controlled, and, you know, just spot heaters like we do, and then use the oil heater to fire. There was a fireplace in there. There was everything. So heating it and air conditioning was not a thought. You know, that was not a concern. We can work around that no matter how big the house is. As long as we can, you know, move around. I mean, with 7 rooms, you can, 7 bedrooms, you could sort of, you know, migrate. Here's the rooms we use in the summer. Here's the rooms we use in winter. And, you know, that, so that wasn't a concern, but the seven grand extra a year in just in taxes, that's a game over, man. That's a game over. Also, I pushed Chiz a little bit. She's very, her stint in the Army, and I don't think I'm able to, you know, I have to really watch what I talk about other people, and I don't mean to draw other people into my conversations when they didn't want to be drawn in. And I've gotten in hot water about this before, not with Chiz at all, but with other friends. And, you know, I apologize. I'm just an honest guy, and I try not to, I try to think about other people, of course, and I never say anything I think is going to be harmful or hurtful. So Chiz, of course, as some of you may know, was an MP in the United States Army. Yes, less Chizzy. My wife, I love her. She's great. Such an interesting tapestry. And we both come from very interesting tapestries, I think. And we were both involved in so much. And that's what I think really helps our relationships. But she got it. She served 3 years in the Army, but she was left out because of for medical reasons. Completely honorable, all this other stuff. And there was some types of talk back and forth about, you know, they had to burn her records and all this so that she could actually continue in the Army. Now, I think that's admirable. But evidently, the military made her feel bad about certain things like this. So, she never tries to apply for anything that has to do, that she's entitled to from the United States government that relates to, you know, GI bills or anything like this. So when the real estate guy who was kind of involuntary sexist, he asked if anyone was a veteran. I said, well, yeah, Chiz was. And she sort of wanted to put the kibosh on that and not apply for the VA loan. Well, I said, listen, I'm right here with you. I'm holding your hand. All we have to do, all we do is we fax them some papers, and that's all we do. We fill out a form, we fax them some paper. We don't have to talk to anyone. We never meet anyone from the military, and then they say yes or no. And I said, I'll fax the papers today. We just sign this thing, and we don't even have to. I'm right here with you. It's all fine. But you know how the military is, and you know people that have gotten out of military. You might have been in military yourself. And you know that you have to be sort of stripped of yourself because, Jesus, you might be called upon to kill your fellow man. And, you know, a compassionate person, that goes against, you know, probably what anyone would ever want to do. So when you join the armed forces, you might have to do things that a normal person should never have to do or want to do. And that's why, you know, we have these military institutions in place to protect us in case of a threat that people want to kill us for unjust reasons and things like this. That's what the military is there for. And once again, you know, I can break this down at great length, but I'd rather not. I mean, there's things in place right now with how our government works that the military is, you know, these are necessary, I'm not going to say evils because they're not evils. They're necessary. They're just necessary. When you have a community that reaches more than 200 people, you need some type of administration over those people because they're not able to, when there's social disputes, and who am I to talk about this type of stuff, but you know, there's social, you need some type of cohesion. So anytime you reach over 200, you need some form of somebody to go to sort of like make a final decision or whatever. And there's all types of different, you know, some people are anarchists and some people, they have different ways. There's all different types of governments and non-governments and organizational units and things like this that can be implemented that might be more effective. But the way things are now, you need, you know, some type of police departments and stuff like this. And then above them, you have the National Guard. And then above them, you have the military, the Air Force, Marines, and Army, and National Guard, and what did I say that already? And, you know, stuff like that there. Okay, and there's a whole lot of things in between, I'm sure, as well. Coast Guard and whatever. And sheriffs and bounty hunters. Dog, the bounty hunter, he's in there, I'm sure. The A-team, probably. So, you know, you have all these different things, and the military is necessary as well. But there's certain mindsets that have to happen the higher up you go, and you know, to what you're going to be called on to do. So, you know, I'm sure that parts of her psyche are quite fragile and delicate, and there's a lot of baggage things attached to that. But I said, you know, I'm here. We're all good. And guess what? We got approved. So now Chiz, of course, feels a lot better, more comfortable. You know, go out and apply for those things. You deserve it. The VA loan is all you need is 2 years in the military and to not have been dishonorably discharged. She met all those requirements. So nothing to be ashamed of. You know, I wish things were different, and I hope I don't get in trouble. clear with chiz and, you know, recant this, edit it if I need to. Where am I? 38. Okay, I'll remember that. Okay, so here we are. I am here. You are here. And we got approved for this. Now, I did find out a lot about my credit. My credit is still very good, although I cannot get a new credit card. I can't approve. I wanted to get this Mac, and I'll talk about this Mac. This just shows as well how busy I am. I implemented this thing for Pitchin, and I really didn't get to talk about why I needed this new Mac. I put this Pitchin thing up on there, and I'll tell you what. Thank you to Paul from the UK. He's the only one that really pitched in with that contribute. I don't even know what the heck that was called. that gimmick I was using. I guess it's still probably up on my website. I should go take that down because that ended on the 9th. He was, besides me, Chizzy, and Paul. That's all it was. And Paul only listens to We Talk Games. So it's great. He would pitch in like $1.38, $1.33, very funny denominations, very humorous how this would come in through the week, and incredibly appreciative. And then at the end, he ramped it up and sent me $50. So thank you very much, Paul. You own my 1 gigabit chip of the new PC3 memory that's in here. I do have my new Mac. I'll talk about that. I applied for a loan. I had to have Chiz cosign on. It's very embarrassing. But what I did find out from our mortgage agent, and the reason that this is relevant, the reason I'm even bringing it up in the first place, is because I've talked about getting out of debt before and said, you know, make sure you get out of debt. You know, get out of debt, tear up your credit cards, only have 1 credit card. That's all you need. Things have really changed a lot. And I don't know how things are for the UK. This is probably purely for the United States of America, but definitely in the U.S., your credit scores now, which, by the way, I still had a very good credit score, but it wasn't as high as it was a few years ago. And I'm like, why? I just got done paying off my last Mac. You know, why? That's good, right? I paid that off. I only have 1 credit card. I don't have more than 80% of what my limit is on there. I should have perfect credit. No. Here's the problem. Now, the credit card score people things want you to have 3 credit cards, and they want you to have on each credit card no more than 80% of your limit on there. But they want you to have 3 credit cards. You know, you can't take your card now and pay it all off and then cut it up and then never use it again. Have your account closed out or whatever. That's what I did. Now, thankfully, that Mac loan was through Citibank. That was like a loan. I would go in there. I never had a credit card. I'd just go in there and pay my loan every month. And I never missed a payment. All my things are good. Everything was good. But my credit score wasn't as high because I only had two. I only had that, which I finished paying off. But thankfully, it stays on there for a year. But now after a year, all of a sudden, I only have 1 credit card, and my credit score is might be a go under 4 or something. I think it was at 423, and I could be completely mistaken if that's not a good score. I think that is the good score, though. But I used to be at, you know, 4.5, 4.7, something like that. And I think those are scores. Who the hell? Who cares? But it's important when you go for a mortgage. So they want you to have 3 credit cards now. So I wanted to get another credit card going, and thought, okay, here's my perfect opportunity. I'm not really raking in the dough with this Pitchin, but it's going to help offset. Now, if you notice, the Pitchin ended at like almost somewhere close to $800. I got to tell you, that is an incredible mistake. It was more like $300, and like once again, like I said, Chiz pitched in, I pitched in, and then what happened was I went into like this circular payment. I was supposed to be saving money in my PayPal, doing this so that I could save up for a new Mac as well, put money towards it. I would never have been able to get a new Mac. if I just had to rely on the pitch in and hadn't have gone for this loan. So everything really fell into place this way. But and I'll talk more about credit because I don't want you to get into credit debt. Now, this might be what the credit card companies obviously want you to do, that now you need to have three credit cards. I mean, that's silly. It's silly that you're not, that you're penalized for being out of debt. And I'll talk a little bit more about that because please, you have to be very, very careful with credit. It's very easy to get out of hand. I'm just going to use this for emergencies. I'm just going to use that. Best bet for you to do is to, you know, take your credit cards, maybe only use one, put the other two in a drawer, keep them. And what they want you to do is make, you know, they need to show activity. So every month or two, get one out, buy something for $15, pay it off right away. That is my recommendation to you. Please do not allow yourself to get in over your head with credit cards. It's very easy to do, and it's not worth it. Credit cards does not mean free money. That is not your money. That is the bank's money. It is the credit card money. They're going to charge you crazy interest on it. And even if you have a good interest rate of like 7 or 9%, like you somehow qualify for these because your credit's so good, that's still, you know, that still can add up to a lot, especially if you start going into thousands. So try to be very careful with that. Try to only make payments that you are able to cover in cash and try to pay them off. Keep them active, but pay them off, and that's how you get the best credit score. And then, of course, they'll increase your limits to crazy $15,000 credit limits and things like this. And it's very easy to get trapped by those. And it's almost impossible to pay off anything that large. So really try to keep a lid on it. Realize that credit is not free money. It's not. It's not your money. It's not free money. It is a temporary loan. And if you want to make a temporary loan to yourself, that's okay. But make sure that you have a plan to pay off that temporary loan, because you can get in a big pickle. I hope I made myself clear on that, and I hope I can help your credit score. But also remember this: if you open a new line of credit, that you don't start to gain the benefit of that for a year. So make your payments for a year. Never miss a payment. If you miss a payment, then you're sort of shooting yourself in the foot. Never miss a payment. The easiest way to do this is online, you know, tie in your online bank account, do it all online. Because, you know, I know, every day we're on a computer. It's very easy to go on a computer and click pay. It's not as easy to, you know, get your bill in the mail, write out a thing, write out a check, put a stamp on it, make sure you don't lose it behind your sofa or whatever. You know, it's a lot easier online. Now, if you work better with the paper trail, that's cool. And I'm not speaking to you, of course. Everyone's different. But for me, definitely easiest online. When I have online payments, boom, I'm on time. Never miss a payment. Okay, that's very important. And don't get out of control. I got this line of credit. I was approved for $5,000. I only used the 2678 or whatever that my computer was. That's it. And I will not use any more until I pay that off. So, and I'll talk more about this, Mac. I'll talk about how much easier my life is. I'll talk about why it was necessary. I put up this pitch in. I don't even tell my closest people why I need this, what it means to me. I create media. I create video. I create artwork. I create music. I create voice work. And my paintbrush is this Mac that sits before me. And I thought of ways that I could, if I only raised $1,000, I thought of ways that I could get the new Mac Mini with the OS X server on it, with the two 500 gig hard drives, and I'd be able to transfer over my two internal 500 gig hard drives. It would have been a lot more difficult. I would have, I of course wouldn't have any ability to, for the my extra two serial ATA drives to be connected to it. I would have had to work on different things, but I was basing on a contingency plan. I thought I could at least raise $1,000 because my G5 was just failing miserably. It takes hours to export this show. It takes days to convert. It took a day to convert any go-go shoot that I would do. It was just falling behind in power. And for someone that is creative and likes to create things with their paintbrush, using this, it would have been like painting with the head of a pin, you know. It's very difficult to do a mural when your paintbrush is a tiny pinhead paintbrush. So that is why, in order to continue to create and not just be sitting and waiting and frustrating and, you know, unproductive, I really needed to move on this. Now, I also tried to think about ways I could integrate my laptop, since I did get that MacBook Pro not too long ago. how I might be able to switch over that, but that was even more impossible because it didn't have a big enough hard drive in it to even accommodate, you know, one of the drives that I'm used to working on. So I thought of two different ways. Number one, I could go with these minis. Number two, I could go with the new Mac Pro. And the configuration I had was somewhere around $3,400 for what I needed. Well, I realized that, you know what, I can do it on just the entry-level Mac Pro, the $2,400 one, and then I'll just throw my existing drives in there and buy an extra chip of RAM, and I can do it for $2,400. And that's what I did. I got Chiz to co-sign on it. I've had this implemented for a while. I've been moving things over. It's been a very, very painful process because I am jumping almost 5 years ahead in technology. And so many of my more demanding applications like Final Cut Pro, and if I was able to install my Logic, which I had kept up with my updates, but I was never able to install because I didn't have an Intel Mac, I was able to install that. But my Final Cut, I ran into problems. All the filters that I used for the Go-Go's no longer worked. All the filters. Now, it wasn't just that the filters that I use in the Go-Go's didn't work. It was that the $400 filter suite that I use in the Go-Go's, that, of course, you know, I was beta testing for all this time, because who has $400 to just spend on a filter pack? Not only did I use these filters in the Go-Go's, but I used them on every single element of the Go-Go's that you could possibly use. The paint wipe transition, all my transitions, all my little the filmic things, tiny little things that you don't even notice because, let's face it, if you notice filters and they're sort of not, and if it's not just conveying a mood and it's conveying a filter, then I failed. So to make things look subtly unique, and convey a mood and things like this, and brand it like the new Go-Go look, that requires a lot of subtlety and a lot of very subtle filters and things like this. Well, every single piece of first edit footage, transitions, lower third pieces, they all had pieces of this package that is a $400 filter suite. Well, I looked for different ways to beta test this, and let me tell you that there are absolutely none. And only the most recent version of this filter pack will work with the Intel Macs. Only the most recent. I tried everything, and I worked on this for about a day. And I tried everything. I tried every way to get this to work, and it was only the most recent version, because you're able to test and try out. And of course, it puts a watermark on and ruins everything. And it was only the most recent version, so I had to figure out a way that I was going to move around some stuff, and I found the suite for $356. So I unfortunately had to plunk down the $356 for that filter suite. And even still with that, editing this last Monday's Go-Go, because I had to make some changes to add in that Bruderschaff business. I had to retweak each one of those filters. But let me tell you, a process that used to take 3 hours to render out, I did in about 4 minutes. That's not a joke. But usually my times on most of the things are about a 10 times speed increase. Something that used to take, 20 minutes, I could do in about 2 minutes, 40 minutes, 4 minutes, those type of things. That is how quick and how much of a difference this new paintbrush for me makes a huge difference, which means that I can really take the time to tweak it and get it to look right. Now, believe me, I'm already working on Monday's Go-Go, and I can fill it up so that it takes just as long. Not just as long, but half as long. I can really load it up. But there's no such thing as too much production. There's only thing as bad production or good production. So Monday's Go-Go might not be all there. You know, there's things I had to, there's changes I had to make. I tried a new backlight on the green screen. I tried a couple different new things. So, experiments. So it might not be all there. I changed how the background looks. I was tired of seeing that aged film look in there. So I still don't know what I'm going to do. It's very difficult to build a studio environment. Believe me, it's very difficult, especially for me, because you can think something's going to look great. You try it out and it looks like poo, and you don't know until it's like almost done. I thought about going back to the LED type of screen look, and I'm still experimenting around with that with different techniques and stuff like that, but I don't know what's going to happen. But for now, Mondays is okay. It's not perfect, but what a pleasure, what a joy. I mean, just even I'm able to now, like, you know, hook up my I'm able to capture it now. It's not called capture log and capture. Well, now it's called, now there's two versions of log and capture and transfer and capture, something like that. Log and transfer, that's what it's called. Because now that we have solid state, 16 gigabit SDHC cards, these little secure digital cards, instead of using actual tape, now you transfer instead of, capturing. So that's really cool that the new Final Cut has that ability. And I'm able to do that now on this Mac, and it's amazing, because what used to take an entire day to convert over to something I can use using the Voltaic on my old Mac, now I set my in and outs of each scene. I click, capture scene, and by the time I'm done setting the in and outs of my next scene, that scene's like already in my computer. It's not a whole day's worth of processing, and I can use it right away. So it's amazing. It's great. And this will allow me to hopefully bring you more media. Now, right now, the media is a little dry because I've just been so busy with things, with planning, with trying to get my house together, with a lot of Chikara business, with inopportune We Talk Games interviews, and not inopportune, but, sporadic, scattered, and especially with my tech job. So it's been very, very demanding on me. But I am working on ways to deliver more media to you, and I hope that 2010 will be a really, really good year for media out of the studio, and I think that it will be. I know some changes have to be made. We are approaching the 200th episode of Chikara Podcast Go-Go. And I think I only have 200 episodes of anything in me. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. But I have no plans on leaving Chikara. I just don't know what my involvement with Chikara will be in 2010. I'm hoping for a lot of changes. I'm hoping to get more music out. I'm setting aside January to create music, because that is what is really in me. It's more in me than anything else, is making music. So I hope to do that in January. Now, I will still be doing my other projects in January. They won't go away. But I'm trying to set aside time in January to create music. I need to have at least one album, if not two albums, come out in January. And thank you all for supporting me. Thank you for your people that are monetary contributors on a monthly basis. Thank you for one-off contributors. Thank you very much for Paul and my pitch in. And see, this is so sad. I didn't even get to tell anybody, why this is important to me. Now, of course, those monthly donations, those donations in the past have all gone towards making this these new Macs happen. So there's no doubt. And if you go to my websites and you buy anything from my Amazon or you buy anything from my Wiggly's Mini Mall, or if you click on the Adobe link, I it was great. I asked my client to click on my Adobe link to do RCS4 upgrades. I made $300 commission off of that. Now, I haven't seen it yet, but that's great. Those are the type of things that can keep this going. When I look at the numbers, especially for a Smart Wrestling fan, if I look at those numbers, I'm in trouble. When I look at the numbers for a Wiggly World, when I look at the numbers for We Talk Games, even Shikara, they're kind of depressing. They're kind of depressing. Even if they go up in the thousands and 2,000s and the 5,000s, they're still depressing, especially at Wiggly World. like 300 to 500 people, sometimes. It's very, very disheartening. I don't care, whatever. One person's good enough if it's the right person, I guess. And I'm glad that you're listening. But there has to be balance, and there has to be balance. I've spoken about this many times before. In anything you do, there has to be a balance. Okay, why is there enough reason for me to do this, that, or the other? So when some of my links pay off and they give me money, then that helps a balance. That makes me happy, makes me glad in my pants. The only problem is that. It's really weird. Now, I know how hard it is to get people to click on or do anything, but if you swing by a Wiggly World, you can click on any of my links and pick up something for yourself or whatever, or for someone else. That's really, really cool, and that's all I can ask for. Thank you very much for that in advance. And same goes for, my stuff on Blip TV and these Mixer, and no fooling, Mixer.com, the Chikara ringtones, the other ringtones, and you can get these ringtones and just download them to your desktop, and they're regular MP3 files, and just play them. They're very short, they're only a minute and a half or whatever, but you don't really need a phone or use them as a ringtone. You can just use them as, I don't know what, but play them and go, ha ha. Use them in your own show, I don't care. They are, I got a check for November, and it was 30 cents. So, that's kind of sad. My CD Baby is usually a lot better. I usually make like $30 a month off of that. And that's amazing. I don't promote, really any of my music. I don't really do any type of active promotion, active campaigns with this. So it's nice that that happens. And I can only see... And believe me, I did very well with it. I was making several hundred dollars when I first launched my Inorganic Mumbience, or when I first launched the 50 Years of Trapdoor and things like that. So I can only see, if I release something after January, that I think I will do probably the best I've ever done, considering that I'm pulling in about $30 a month off of that with absolutely no advertising or whatever. So I think those are like on one-off songs, So at 40 cents a piece, 50 cents a piece, depending on who it's from, 38 cents a piece, 30 cents a piece. I think I'm doing pretty good, with that stuff. I think I could do very well if I release a new album. And hopefully it will be something that is accepted by the public. I think especially with Chikara themes, I think that's going to be more over with the general public, and it might draw attention to some of my more original works. Now, realize as well, the trapdoor stuff that you hear on my albums is stuff I wrote in the 80s, really. I've never had opportunity to sit down and create new music, except Inorganic Mumbience, which is completely, its own genre that has nothing to do with the direction of disco punk and stuff like that. So it will be good. It will be good to see what we sound like now, because I think that we sound a little like Chikara themes, but more dancey and stuff like that. Stuff happening as well. Sort of, I think, somewhere a happy medium between the opening Chikara theme to 2009 and the remix of it at the end of the Chikara episodes of the remix of 2009. And that should be interesting. So I look forward to doing music. And emails are coming in, tech job houses, and text messages about We Talk Game guests. It never ends. I've been interrupted at least 4 or 5 times this show so far. Oh, there goes another one. Let me look around if there's any emails I can address now, because I think that most of them I want to do with Chiz, so I'm going to hope to get to that over this weekend. Well, let me take a look. Hold on. Stand by. Holy cripes. Well, that just took about 20 minutes. No, the coop is in more disarray than I've ever seen it in since I transferred my recording area to this new recording studio area. This is really, stuff is just all over the place, and I really need to get some semblance of order. Like I said, some of these emails I will be covering with Chiz, hopefully over the weekend, since they were sort of addressed to both of us. And I'm sorry that it has taken so long to get to some of these. Some of these are from, of course, October and everything else. Of course, from Larry, one more thing, guys, to celebrate the nuptials. You know my cat is named after Wiggly. Well, now our mouse is named Chiz. Now, Wiggly the cat and Chiz the mouse. That's lovely. And more from Mr. Mutant Larry, and I'm not going to read the more personal bits, but the one thing that I will read here, the internet can do amazing things, and I'm not just talking about the porn, but the porn is amazing. I mean, 24 hours, more than you can look at in your lifetime. And did you see that one girl with the, well, never mind. Anyways, ellipses, ellipses, ellipse. The most amazing thing I have found about the internet is that I have a great friend that I have never seen or spoken to or even been within 100 miles. You have really made my life so much better, as I feel there is someone out there who I share a similar spirit. And now you have someone who just increases that spirit of fun and life and knowledge. Treat her like you need to treat yourself, as a special person who is making, he's giving me advice here for treating Chizzy. Special person is making the world better by just being her. Being here. Hear her. Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mutant Larry. And I keep that email because that's a nice one. I like to look at that every now and then. It's parts addressed to me, parts addressed to Chiz about our wedding. Oh, here's that email. Oozer Podcast. I got to get over there. Yes, Mike. Okay, Mike. Mike is inviting me on his podcast, and I want to go do that. So let me set that to my important pile to do right after this show. Thank you very much, Mike, and sorry about that. Whoops. I was on, I don't know if you heard this or not, I was on Supernova Vacancy with the DJM and his partner on their NES, NES. Ness, the NES, the DJM, the DJM, and the Nessin, Nesses. And I talked about the pro wrestling, and I loved it. And I would go back any time. It was a lot of fun. So check, I think that was episode 9 of Supernova Vacancy. Yeah, I'll put a show note. I'll put it in the show notes. I know that really nobody, I'm not going to be sending troves of people over there, that's for sure. Because of my low subscriptions here. But it was really nice to sit down and do that. And what a difference, man, when all I have to do is like call into his Skype. And then like when I was done talking, I just went about my life. I was done with it. What a difference when you don't have to sit and try to, you know, make a show out of what you record. Just show up and talk. It was great. You know what I just realized as well? I don't know if I was in the middle of something. I just had to answer like 3 or 4 emails. I never told everyone that our wedding videos video is available online for anyone to download. It's an MP4 file. Just go to, you can watch it on your iPod or your iPhone or your Sony PSP or whatever, and your PS3 as well. Just go to wigglesworld.com/wedding/. Speak of my lovely wife now. Of course, I was mean to her. But no, I was just sometimes the obvious is right there, and it's humorous. But you can see the whole thing, the trip, and it's actually entertaining. You know, it's not like I think I could watch it even if I, you know. It's not like any other wedding video you've probably ever seen. That's all. It's not Star Wars or anything like that, but it's definitely entertaining, I think. WigglesWorld.com/wedding/. Just put that trailing slash in because that'll take you to that directory. And then in that directory, you will see the file, and you can right-click on it, control-click on it, and choose to download it. Or you can watch it online if you, have QuickTime or something that can play MP4s online, or however you want to do it, man. I don't care. It's up there for you, and it will remain up there. I don't think I'm going to integrate it with the, in iTunes because, it has unlicensed music that is, not for public sharing, displaying, type of thing. So if I point you to it and you download it yourself, then it's more like a one collector to another, as they used to call that, beta testing. And then one of my friends sent me from thetelegraph.co.uk, do a search for God is not the creator, claims academic. And this is a story about Professor Ellen von Waldie, a respected Old Testament scholar and author, claims the first sentence of Genesis, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth," is not a true translation of the Hebrew. And this is something I knew since the 70s or 80s, late 70s, about how it was not perfect. Something became chaotic, and this is something that even the Jehovah's Witnesses will go into. They say that, first it was like a perfect creation, and then something happened to make it not a perfect creation, and that is where they come up with, dinosaurs are created by Satan, and, he was around here making, dinosaurs and all this other stuff. Hey, they did pretty good. Now, dinosaurs lived, a few hundred million years or so, and humans not even 1 million years. So I guess Satan's creations are doing a lot better. But that notwithstanding, dinosaurs, 180 million years, and some of them, of course, some of them, still roaming around. But it goes on to say in this article, which is a very good article. I haven't read the whole thing yet. But she's hung up on the word bara. The Hebrew verb bara, which is used in the first sentence of the book of Genesis, does not mean to create, but to spatially separate. Because in her studies, she realizes that God was a subject. God created, followed by two or more objects. Why did God not create just one thing or animal, but always more? She concluded that God did not create. He separated earth from the heaven, because initially, in this time, what was popular to believe at the time, she writes in her thesis that the new translation fits in with ancient texts. According to the ancient text, there used to be an enormous body of water, and that's why we hear about, the upper firmament, the lower firmament, and the waters above and the waters below and things like this. And that enormous body of water in which monsters were living, covered in darkness, she said. Yes, and this is, very. We even see the Leviathan called by name, which preceded Judaism, which preceded Christianity, which was which was littered Sumerian myths, littered Mesopotamian myths about the Leviathan that encircled the earth, the giant serpents, the giant monsters, and things like this. So she says about, you know, this verb not fitting in. Maybe I am even hurting myself. I consider myself to be religious, and the Creator used to be very special as a notion of trust. I want to keep that trust. A spokeswoman for the Radbound University said the new interpretation is a complete shake-up of the story of the creation as we know it. Oh, come on. Really? Really? It's a shake-up of God putting plants on the earth and then creating the sun? And the sun and the moon, both giant shining objects in the night sky, and the stars being something completely different than what the stars is. This is a shakeup of the creation story. Come on now, come on, man, really, really. If you consider yourself any type of academia, you cannot consider that a shakeup. If you want to believe in myths and superstitions and things like this, and they enrich your life, and you like them and you cling to them, that's fine. There's no problem with that. But if you read the first page of the Bible and you say this is what really happened, then I have nothing to think. And you want to like compare this to, you know, to anything else in science, and I'm not talking about pseudoscience or anything like that. You want to compare that as a historical event, and then you want to write papers on it. Now, if you want to believe it, that's one thing. If you want to believe it, that's one thing. I'm totally leaving you alone. That's cool. For whatever reasons, it's all good. But if you try to bring this into academia and you want to examine this and you want to do comparative research based on the creation myth, okay, and you want to use the creation myth as some sort of template for proving some other hypothesis of science or something like this, or how nuclear fission and fusion work or something like this, that is absurd. It's insanity. It's shameable. It is like trying to learn egg biology from studying Humpty Dumpty. You know, you can't put an egg back together after it smashes, after a man egg it falls off the wall. That's how embryos are made. It's ludicrous. It's a good article, and I want to read it because I love to learn about the etymology of words. I love to learn about the original Hebrew. I love to learn about the original Greek. And the Septuagint and all that business. So I'm always up for that. In fact, now I'm getting into more original Greek meanings of words and how words are used and how they were translated to English or to other languages in Latin and what have you. And how those translations led to complete bastardizations of the New Testament. It's some really, really good stuff, some really amazing stuff. Some stuff I'm still not completely sold on, but I've really been getting into the book lately, which you can get the newer version of it. Why don't you look this up? Earl Doherty, Jesus, Neither God Nor Man, The Case for a Mythical Jesus, by Earl Doherty. Earl Doherty spending the majority of his life seriously proving things that I have mentioned both, you know, honestly and flippantly. So why not pick up this book, Jesus, Neither God Nor Man, The Case for a Mythical Jesus by Earl Doherty. That is what I recommend to you today, and I will get more into that hopefully later on. Speaking of Jesus, Culture sent you a message. Hello, it is me, the Maverick, you know, SWF Maverick. Maverick, one of the few people, not few, there's many. Many people do not realize that my relationship with Joe Negron is strained at best. At worst, I completely cannot stand the person anymore and would not want to have anything to do with anything that he's selling, period. I don't want to be associated with anything. I don't want our names mentioned in the same sentence. And you know, I'm not a person to hold a grudge, which sounds kind of odd after just saying what I've said. But, and I'm also not a person to forgive. I don't believe that anyone is in need of my forgiveness, but there's a complete breakdown of understanding between myself and Joe Negron, which until certain things would be put into place, I just would rather not at all be associated with them. I mean, number one, I'm very thankful for all the people I met through Smart Wrestling Fan, and that was a great run for me. It was a great time for me. Now, you would not know I was involved with Smart Wrestling Fan because I am completely removed from anything to do with the Smart Wrestling Fan, not by myself, except for, you know, my website is still there, I guess. I haven't really been there in a couple months. Let's see here. It's going on a field trip. Smart Mark Video. Yeah, it doesn't even come up like in my things I'm associated with anymore. There we go. Let's see here. Yep, it's still my web design and everything. So, let me format. Whatever. So, yeah, my artwork. So, you know, I've been totally stripped of all that. And when I left, I tried to leave as graciously as possible and as seamlessly as possible and as quietly as possible and without any, you know, anger, venom, or whatever. And I've gone over this before, but still people like Maverick and some other folks really don't understand. I miss Joe. And my life is so much better without having all those stresses in my life. And to be threatened by, you know, lying to the community that was the only thing that kept me there, at least for the last year, that is something that needs balance to undo and the lies that were told and everything else. Just, you know, Maverick always says, I don't want to take sides. And that's why I don't want to talk to Maverick anymore, because there is a side to be taken. You know, one person was a complete douche and the other one was trying to be honest and on the table and level and a real person about the whole thing. And the other person was trying to be a complete dick. So right now, you know, unless that person is no longer a dick, then I really don't want to have anything to do with my association with that person. I'm not grateful to that person for leading me into podcasting. I'm not grateful to that person for anything. And unless things change, because it's totally been undone. Congrats on marrying one of the greatest girls ever. Yes, thank you. You're welcome. My podcast, TPM Culture Shock. Since you are one of the inspirations of the podcast, I'd like your thoughts. I know it's from a Republican viewpoint and you being a Democrat. Number one, I'm not a Democrat and I've never been a Democrat. Okay? Do you ever listen to the show, Maverick? I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a Republican. And I'm not an independent, and I'm not a Green Party, although I am associated with the Green Party, because that was the only thing that was the furthest away from anybody relating to politics I could be a member of that party. I am Green Party, if you have to call me a party. But to identify me as a Green Party would be missing the whole me, you know? Just like me referring to you as a Republican. That would be missing you, Maverick. I think you are special. That's why I used to have you on my show. All right? There's other people I want to kill. Anytime you come on there, kill, kill, the kill switch. That was not me. I thought it was important for you to have a voice, you know? Republican point of view. Yeah, I tried to listen to it. I've already gone over this. Well, I have a differing opinion. Also, can I get a plug from Wiggs World? Wiggs World, yes. Maverick show is called Culture Shock. I mentioned it on last show. Might have a hard time finding it. But try to find Culture Shock on your Facebook, and you might be able to be buddies with him. right now, I'm not buddies with Maverick. Make, you know, I'll as time passes, that might reestablish the Facebook. But for right now, I just have too many other things going on to worry about that right now. And I will worry about that in the future again, most likely. Yeah, ups and downs like that. Let's see what we have here. Not really sure if this person would want me to mention them. I mention everybody, so I'll just go on. The past 3 weeks have been quite an adventure. This is from November 10th. Quite an adventure. It started by having breakfast with my mom one day. We were discussing things about life, and I brought up the fact that the only reason I probably believe in any sort of God is because of fear that I will go to hell. Fear of punishment is just a horrible reason to not do something. A fear of getting caught, fear of punishment. I mean, isn't it better to not want to do bad things because you don't want to hurt other people? You know, you want to do things that are probably more constructive for the community. And things like this. But he's saying about believing in God, which, once again, believing in God because you want to hedge your bets, because you know, you don't want to go see Mr. Pointy Tail or whatever. These other myths and you know, the boogeyman, stuff like that, it's sad. But of course, I believe by the end of this email, we go somewhere else. Brought up the fact, but thank you for sharing. The only reason I probably believe in some any sort of God is because of a fear that I will go to hell. And you're not alone. I hadn't been saying prayers or talking to a higher power for quite some time. The very next day, I was at home playing cards and with my dad when I started to have a big anxiety attack. Then I thought I was having a heart attack because my chest hurt so bad. Yep. Yep, that's anxiety will do that to you, no doubt about it, and you will get chest pains, short of breath, all different types of ailments from anxiety and anxiety disorders. Temporal lobe epilepsy also leads to, and why this ties in, you may know better than I, but temporal lobe epilepsy also leads to propensity for belief and experiencing out of body higher spiritual God beliefs. So if you suffer from any type of temporal lobe epilepsy, you're probably a believer of some sort in a higher deity, a higher power, a higher existence, a higher plane, and your levels ramping away from temporal lobe epilepsy or some other types of anxiety disorders may also lead to a propensity towards that type of thing. And that's not a scapegoat. That is observable by people that deal with temporal lobe epileptics and other sorts of neurological and brain and anxiety disorders. And I mean, those things are not necessarily all tied together, with physical and with chemical imbalances, with physical imbalances, with neural pathway troubles, with that type of thing. But they all can lead to these beliefs, and that's what it is. I mean, you have a panic attack. Why do you have a panic attack? Because you have an irrational fear. Irrational fears are just that. They are fears that are not rational. They are things that you are afraid of, and believe me, you are honestly afraid of them. You are exhibiting symptoms of someone who is literally terrified. You may have changes in blood pressure. You may have rapid heartbeat. You may have trouble breathing. You will have symptoms. You may have the exact symptoms of someone really going through adrenaline traumas and things like this. But they're caused by fears that a rational person would not be afraid of, like an irrational fear of flying. You know, I'm sure it's perfectly normal to have a twinkle of trepidation because of the nasty things that can happen to you. But being paralyzed by fear is an irrational response because flying is so freaking safe. It is incredibly safe compared to other forms of travel, which you do every day, you know? You do these other types of travel every day, and you are so many thousands of times, hundreds of thousands of times, more at risk of being involved in a serious accident, life-ending accident in these other forms of transportation that you do once, twice, three, four times a day sometimes, you know? How many times, you go to work, you come home from work, you go to the store, you go come back from the store, you do try to take someone, drop someone off here or there, and all, you know, you do this just in the course of one day. And you maybe only travel once a year, you know, so by plane, I should say. So, that is an irrational fear. And there are much more sublime ones as well. So that's what anxiety disorders are. They are irrational fears. And groups, like I have mentioned before, which unfortunately have become one step above a chain letter, one step above a one of these telemarketing things. Unfortunately, the Midwest Center for Anxiety and Stress and Anxiety, I loved their course. It really helped, hand in hand with seeing a psychologist, hand in hand with seeing a psychiatrist that prescribed medication. All these things are little bits that all add up, and these little bits are very important part of the process. If you just go and you get medication, chances are that nothing's really going to change, except that you're going to be able to deal with things a little bit better, doped up or what have you. But you really need to have things work hand in hand with all these little bits, things that you're trying on your own with something like the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety. Seeing a professional psychologist, some type of Mr. or Mrs. or Ms. That works with people with some type of problem that they need extra help with outside of their immediate family and stuff like that. And then perhaps medication if a psychiatrist deems you that you need some type of medication. And never be afraid of this. Embrace this. It's going to help you. It's going to make your life a lot easier. And if you're unsatisfied with the results, then you seek out other people to help you with this. It's very simple. It's very simple, and it can really help you. And also realize that you may go to see a psychologist, and after so many visits, you may be okay to end visits. And you can discuss that with your psychologist, and they'll be probably the first ones to let you know that you're that their help isn't needed anymore. And then, you know, you can revisit them at longer and longer dates apart and see how you're making out, and then visit them more, and whatever you can do, whatever you can do to be better. But let's get back into this email here. And then I went to the ER with my dad. They did chest x-rays and EKG to make sure my heart and lungs were okay, which they were. The doctor gave me 3 Xanax so I could relax at night. 3 in one night. Wow. Well, it depends on the dosage, I guess. But yeah, I bet you didn't really care about anything. The next day I felt okay for a bit, then went right back to having a giant anxiety attack. Okay, well, then this to me, I'm no doctor at all, and I'm not trying to prescribe anything, but I would say that you probably should go see a psychiatrist, to figure out what would be the best, because maybe Xanax is not good, and maybe that could send you manic, because when you came out of this, you went back right into having a giant one, and you also probably need some type to talk to people as well. And then, believe me, this can go away. I went back to the ER, then about 3 hours later, was checked into a psychiatric care ward facility for 6 days. I got on some medication, was released on a Friday. That Saturday was horrible. The drugs they had me on made me worthless and dopey. Yeah, you don't want that. And that's why a psychiatrist is the person that will be best suited to... And it's not, and being a psychiatrist now, as far as I know, from what I've experienced, is not like Bob Newhart anymore. I loved Bob Newhart. But that's more like a psychologist and someone else is social, not social worker, but I don't know, mind worker or whatever they call themselves. I went to Mr. Joseph. He was great. And he couldn't prescribe anything, but, you know, I worked with him as well as my psychiatrist. And believe me, you only see a psychiatrist for like 15 minutes. You know, you don't have to go in there for real long things. They just check on how you're reacting to your medication because they don't want you to be dopey. They don't want you to be worthless. They want you to be functioning members of society, and hopefully they will work with you to make that happen, and you can be the best you can be. Because there's some things that you need extra help on. Now, maybe not you personally. Maybe you're you know, like Chiz. Look at her. Jesus. You know, she really... She's not like me. I've been getting worse and worse and worse. And this is another thing. I mean, I finally have health insurance. And have I set any appointments? Zero I've set. And I've been getting very bad in my brain. Usually when I'm incredibly busy, I'm okay. Because that helps with my anxiety problems. My, whatever you call it, bipolar. But... The type of stresses I've been under with my tech job have not allowed me to express myself creatively, and put me in that other mindset, that analytical, that robot mindset and stuff like that. So it's not really been conducive to being better. Oh, good. I got money from Chikara. That's great. Yeah. It was an interesting shoot last night. Not really. I mean, it was incredibly boring to anyone watching. It was just me and Quack. So that's what you'll see for a little while. Okay. But yeah, you know, it's these little bits, it's these steps, and knowing that these steps are there can also help. And what am I going to do to get better? I'm going to set some appointments. Xanax is good. I mean, you shouldn't, it's very rare that you're going to be put on Xanax, but what do I know? It's very rare that you would be put on Xanax as something that you take every day. Now, my mom is on Xanax, because she has anxiety attacks and she does not go to the type of psychologist and psychiatrist that would get her better. She just, you know, deals with this every day and gets it from her family doctor. Now, she also takes it because she has involuntary head tremors. So that helps soothe that out. So there's other reasons to take Xanax other than psychological ones. So I stopped taking those pills. Now, you got to watch that. I woke up and took one of the pills, then didn't move from my bed for 2 hours, so I stopped taking pills. Now, see, you want to make sure that you can stop taking these pills, so I hope that you did that, because some of these pills you have to wean off of as you would wean onto them, so be careful. That is called self-medicating right there. You know, don't take my word for what you need. You don't know, I don't know, and you don't know. Go to see a professional. And if, like I said, if you don't like the professional, then you go see another professional. Sunday started out okay. Then I had another attack and was checked back into the psychiatric care ward again for another 6 days. I was put on some antidepressants and benzodiazepines for my anxiety. And now been praying at least once a day because I feel I am not strong enough right now to do it on my own. So I've been looking for answers through any means necessary. I feel very odd about praying again, since I feel I am a logical thinking person and still am not sure about praying or believing in what could be the invisible man. A good friend of mine told me to take this as a sign from God, since I had almost renounced my faith. Yeah, that's how God would you know, punish you for renouncing your faith. He would send you into psychiatric wards with doctors around instead of just fixing you, bang, and then that's your revelation, you know. I've also been questioning. I have also been questioned fate. Questioning fate. Is life really set up to go on a linear path, or do we make our own paths in life? I'm sure that answer will be hard to find, if ever. Well, I think we could find an answer to that as long as we don't get hung up on adjectives, as long as we don't get hung up on ghost words. I don't understand. I was living without medication or anything for 3.5 years. Then all of a sudden I am back on them and looking for answers in anything. Currently, I am looking for a job since I have moved back to hometown for about 2 months ago. I have to do a job which I do not want to do, which is cooking. But in this town, I can't get a job without experience. And since I have 9 years of cooking experience, I have to do it to sustain. Well, I'll tell you what. I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I'm doing my tech job. I definitely don't want to be doing that. But it's all about those balances of why we do things. Sometimes we need to eat. In order to eat, we suffer a little bit to reap the benefits. And we have to see those benefits, and we have to understand those benefits, and we have to weigh those benefits, of course. And as far if you've been cooking for 9 years, that's a lot of experience. So I would think one step might be that might help, and I'm not sure, but might be to, if you're able to do it, to try to look for a more unique place to cook at, cook for, cook in. And I'm not sure how cooking goes, and I'm not sure, but I'm sure, you know, but talking does a lot. And I would take a tip from these video game guys, a lot of these video game programmers that treat their lives like a video game. I'm going to go, it's not me doing it. And this is part of Buddhist disassociation, being attached to ideas, but not to their outcome, not to the result. Whatever happens, I don't care. I'm excited. I like to do it. I am excited about doing this thing. But whatever the outcome of this thing that I'm attached to, that I'm happy with, that I'm excited to do, I'm passionate about, whatever the outcome of it, I don't care. I'm not attached to that outcome. And put yourself in a game and challenge yourself. I'm going to go talk to these people, even though I don't think I have any right to be there doing this job or whatever, and try to do something maybe more interesting involving cooking, and then maybe you can actually like it. And that's just one step towards perhaps doing something that you really, really do enjoy. I thank you for being a friend of me and congratulate you and Chisholm Wedding. Hope everything is well with you, Wiggly. Take care. Thank you, pal. Thank you very much. And I will address certain things like destiny. Or what do we call freedom of choice? What do we call free will? Yes. Free will biologically to me is not real, because physically you don't get something. There's no free lunch. Now there's energy exchanged, so it can't be free. Now that's really breaking it down minutely, but. But that does kill that idea of free will and giving free will and bestowing upon us free will and stuff like that. But what about the idea, the concept of free will? Not necessarily the physicality of things happening. What about that? What about free will? I make my own path. I make my decisions. Or is everything predestined? We go down and it blows my mind that and a lot of scientists believe in this. Destiny type of thing too. Now, I don't know how many a lot is. That's a very general term, and I've never done any research, but I've heard scientists that I respect talk about things like this. And to me, it's like, you know, given the same choice, you would make the same decision over and over and over and over and over again. I don't have that type of mind that could ever believe that. My mind does not allow me to believe that I can't just, you know, let my arms and everything flail about and just do unexpected things that I wouldn't have normally done. And I did that just now. Now, would I have made the same choice to do that? I don't know, because I can do them in all different ways. But what we do know about studying the brain is that we actually make a decision before our decision-making brain parts that analyze things kick in. Like if we have to make a choice of a physical thing, like should I grab this pot or not grab this pot? Should I, you know, turn left, turn right? Any type of split second decision that we have to make, or maybe even ones that we sit and think about, our initial decisions when we see something, when we see somebody, when we first meet someone and we already have decided whether we would do them or not before we even start talking to them or whatever. Many of these decisions happen before our thought processing decision-making parts of our brains kick in. They're on deeper level. They're in more hardwired levels. Now, does that mean that we would always make the same decision? No, because some things we don't have to make split decisions, and we do sit and think about them. We do process them. This is like the whole thing with driving that I once talked about, and the whole idea of not being able to talk on a cell phone and drive and listen to the radio and everything else. Driving is not a purely 100% conscious event. Many elements of driving take advantage of our subconscious mind, the parts of our minds that are not actively engaged in analysis. Anyone that's been with a first-time driver knows what someone thinking about driving and has their full attention focused on driving drives like. They're all over the road because they're trying to use their logical mind, their conscious mind, rational mind to drive and push this car around and make it happen. And it's too slow. So they overcompensate, and then they re-overcompensate. And they do this. Driving, you have to relax into driving and let your subconscious and let your spotlight vision, your peripheral vision, spotlight vision, your searchlight vision, you know, these narrow, these myopic, these the wide view vision, everything you have to let just relax and take it all in, and then you can drive straight down the road or, you know, and stay within the lines. that's an important thing, always. Now there are some types of things where you're not, when you're looking at texting, then you're not looking at the road, okay? So there are some things like driving and texting that you shouldn't do. And this is without the aid of Europe's giant gross gore-fest commercials about the dangers of the two. But there's nothing wrong with talking. As you talk to someone right next to you, they can be a distraction, and sometimes you tell them to, you know, quiet up. But if you have like a headset on where you don't have to take your eyes off the road, then to me, there's nothing wrong with that. Or if you're talking through your car stereo, there's nothing wrong with that because you're still concentrated on the road. Keep your eyes where they need to be. The things that take your eyes off the road or out of that angle of looking, I know there was a test, I believe, at Harvard where they had a television that projected a screen onto your eye. Into your field of vision where you can watch the news as you're driving. But it was projected exactly where your eyes should be looking optimally for driving. So although people were watching this news show, it was projected in a way that wasn't obscuring their vision. It was keeping their eyes where they needed to look so that they weren't actually looking around at places that they shouldn't be looking, and they actually drove better. Now, I don't have that, I don't have my source on that, but you're more than welcome to look that up and find out about it. That was a pretty old test as well. I'm pretty sure it was done in the 90s, if not late 80s even. Now, it had to be 90s, probably mid-90s. And I'm not sure it was Harvard either. It might have been Penn or Penn State or something like this. But, you know, do some research on it. But seriously, keeping your eyes where they should be is what's very important. That's why texting is not good, and doing other things with your phone is not good, and holding your phone is not good, because you need both your hands to drive. Okay, now you only need one hand at a time, usually on a wheel, because then you shift with your other hand, or you're doing other things, but some things you shouldn't do while you're driving with one hand. So try to keep both hands on a wheel. That's about it. But what I was trying to get at here, as far as free will, free thought, most things that we make decisions on happen before we actually get to think about them. And a great example is, like I said, like driving. So, we humans were definitely not given free will to do this, that, or the other. And our brains are just built to bypass or to preempt our will centers of the brain, and other parts of the brain happen before, more animalistic types of brain. Definitely no sign of a creator there, or against what a creator would do if we were actually bestowed with free will, in my opinion. And look, I'm not saying denounce your faith, don't believe in leprechauns and fairies and big papa up in the sky, but I'm saying, let's examine why we even believe these things, and what do we actually believe. And I've said this many times. Most of the Christians I know, they know parts of their Bible. They know what they believe, but they don't realize that what they believe isn't from their Bible. and that's what I think is so important about studying the Bible, studying the religion, studying Christianity, studying Judaism. Looking at what shapes us, and hopefully opening us up to things that we have denied ourselves because we falsely believe. We believed in things that aren't even, number one, in the Bible. There's no people going to hell. There's nothing like that. None. Find one. So far, no one has sent me anything with people going to heaven or hell. And I thought I put in a request for that last week. I mean, other than people that were taken up by the Lord, Elijah, Moses, Enoch, Jesus, there's no people up in heaven. When Jesus comes to call the people out of the tomb, what do you mean people in a tomb? Aren't they in heaven? Why are people still in Sheol, which is one of the words that's translated to hell? Why are people still in Sheol if they're up in heaven, as spirits? And you certainly don't want to be dragging 2,000-year-old people out of the ground. Jeez, there's nothing left of them. They're not going to be zombies. They're going to be fully whole. Oh, come on. Then why even bother saying they're coming out of the grave if we're just going to make new people, out of thin air, that used to exist? Recently, there was a YouTube video. I do this sometimes. I know it's futile, and my comments probably never even make it to being posted. But there was a video dealing with, the 2012 apocalypse and all this other complete horseshit. This one was about the rapture, and all those books, I don't know what they're called, swept away or something, swept up or kept up or kill the non-Christians and make them suffer in eternal hell. Your friends that will burn. Hey, thanks for considering me your friend, everyone as well. And especially if you are a Christian, because I'm going to burn in eternal hell, in torment forever. So, hope you like your buddy now. I hope you feel good about your buddy when you're strumming your harp underneath a tree and with Jesus and that righteous dude God, while I'm fucking burning in hell and suffering all those terrible pangs, as are probably most of your relatives and friends that you know, because they ain't doing it exactly right. The only one true way, which no one can agree upon. But I digress, and I looked at this this one video about, you know, it was, the Bible says let her get Jesus. I can't imitate a TV radio voice, especially with a radio voice rather, especially without my effects going on, and I'm losing my voice. My throat's gone. I don't know how much more I could do. But this thing went on about, you know, the rapture and pulling up. They totally avoided that it would be only 144,000 Jewish virgin men that have never soiled themselves by touching a woman. And it is not just a woman. How did they phrase it? I think it may have been about wife. Nothing about concubines or things like this. So, you know, they just went on and on about this, how this rapture is going to happen, which is nowhere in the Bible. You know, it mentions about Jesus coming in the clouds, you know, just how he left the clouds, 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 clouds. He really likes the clouds. And, you know, you have to realize as well, many times clouds are symbolic and stuff like that. They don't necessarily have to mean physically that, you know, he stood on a cloud and then was swept up with God. Hopefully we're going to talk about the mythical Christ and how the mythical Christ led into, paved the way for having to create the flesh and blood Christ, the historical Jesus. And hopefully we can show and we can explore how the mythical Christ, you know, preceded the, well, we know by the writings of the Bible, were the epistles Jesus that they're talking about? Were the epistles Christ, the Jesus Christ? Was that a purely, entirely mythical Christ, never flesh and blood? Is the wording of the epistles such that it precludes or even goes against there ever have been, because if you don't know, Paul didn't start writing about this until like 60. That's what it's said to be written in. Paul's writing started in 60, 30 years after Christ was already supposed to be gone off the earth. So Paul never met Jesus, of course, except saw him in visions. And but he also, you know, other very interesting things. Paul never took a pilgrimage to go see Mount Sinai, you know, where his Lord, his Savior, the most important person to him and to everyone he ever talked to. He never made a pilgrimage to go check out the place where they killed his Lord. He never went to Bethlehem. He never went to Nazareth. He never went to the barn. It wasn't a barn. It was, the manger. He never went to any of these places. He never tried to go and visit with you know, Mary or people that still may have been alive. He never did any of these types of things that you would think someone obsessed with their Lord would have, you know. Why wouldn't he want to go interview the people that bid on his garments and things like this? And not only that, you know, not even real mention of it. He mentions like Jerusalem like once or twice as a holy city, having nothing to do with, you know, Jesus ever have been there at all, you know. So there's a lot left out, but, you know, leaving out this type of information, although it's incredibly bizarre, it's not damning. Although when you make mention of, can Jesus really bring people back from the dead, and then not mentioning the two people that he did resurrect, you know, Lazarus and that little girl, I think it was, isn't that, you know, odd? He's already done it on Earth and shown that you can. And he's healed all these people. There's no mention of his ministry. There's no mention of Jesus's spreading his gospel. No mention of him being head of the early church there. So it's very odd that these things do not appear in the early epistles. We only hear about the flesh and blood man laid his hands on people, resurrected people, walked on water, and this in the Gospels. And I don't know if you know the difference between the epistles and the Gospels, but I would Google that up. That's a good place to start. Know your stuff, you know. Know what you're talking about. But I can't think of what... So I was reading this thing about the Rapture. Deborah Harry, great song, you know, Rapture. But I was reading about the... But in the Bible, no. You know, nothing. Good luck. Good luck. One word is used, rapture, and that just means a sweeping up. And that's where Jesus is supposed to come in the clouds. He's going to get his army of 144,000 virgin men, Jewish men, that have never soiled themselves with a woman. And then what's going to happen is he's going to do some business down on earth, getting it ready while these people are all up in the sky and safe from all the other hell he's going to be causing on earth to happen, the doom and destruction and all that business, and then that's going to like get it all set up for him, and then he's going to ride a horse and all this other business. But that's the only thing. There's no, you know, big giant rapture where we all go and meet Jesus in the clouds and everyone's happy, and then what happens from there, who knows, transforms the earth and stuff like that. Just once again, only mentioned once, and then just elaborated on by other religions and modern day writers, which is the way that religion should be. It was all a word of mouth thing. It wasn't until we put these books down and applied this dogmatism to it and said this is the unchanging word of God. You know, if religion keeps changing, that's why I think Catholicism is it, man, because they keep changing. They change constantly, you know. They just make it up as they go along, and that's undogmatic, although they do, you know, prescribe to definite dogmatic ideas. That's how religion used to be. It used to constantly be evolving. As I mentioned before, plenty of places in the Old Testament, in the early Old Testament, the earlier books, about a very polytheistic going-ons, you know. Many gods, council of gods, just like the ancient beliefs. Another, it's so important that we do not remove the entity, we do not remove the organism from the environment. You know, we don't put these things in a vacuum. You have to realize what the common beliefs were at this time. When we're talking about the New Testament, we're talking about this is Hellenistic Greece. Okay, we've already talked about the different New Testament writers, how they wanted to, you know, craft their own, their best Christian story they possibly could, create their own Jesus, create their own Christ, and distribute a good message to make good Christian people, whether that involved being more Judaic, whether that involved being more Christian, or amalgam of the both, or whatever, to get across their points, to try to be the best Christians and tell the best Christian story that they can. These people are just trying to do that, and they're trying to motivate they're trying to move these stories along, and especially in the Old Testament, you can watch, you know, as soon as it became written word, from the passed down things had to be changed, things had to be written in side notes, but they still used the same, they used plural verbs, they used plural nouns talking about gods, and the verb associated with those plural nouns was plural as well. I mean, that's what's amazing, you know, this is, we don't speak it that way. Our English language is different than Hebrew. The English language is different than Greek and different than a lot of other languages. Look at Chinese. It's everything's like a verb, you know. And you can have plural and non-plural. So it's, you know, knowing the etymology of these words is very important. I'm just leaving the mic open this show. Sorry for, I'm not going to edit out my deep breaths and stuff, and I apologize. But it's been too long. I really need to get this stuff out. So let me just read what I wrote on the YouTube, my YouTube response to all the Christians that were very happy. And they were trying to defend how, they were trying to defend Jesus coming back and wiping out everybody, you know, and cleansing, ethnic cleansing and all this other stuff. and God's wrath. And they were trying to defend how, no, God is a God of love. And this wrath is not an evil wrath. It's a good wrath. And, you know, it's killing you in a good way. And ethnic cleansing in a good way, you know, the love way. But, you know, so a lot of this rhetoric was going on, but I was just responding to the video itself. And what I wrote here was, I can't wait for the Lord and his horse, three trumpets, four trombones, and his sword to take up the 144,000 men that have never soiled themselves with a woman to his magic cloud so that he can raise the dead in the ground. What dead? I thought everyone gets told the story that you go to heaven or hell when you die. How could Grandpap still be in the ground? It's amazing how believers never question their fantasy. Take humans on this earth in comparison to other creatures, and yet we anthropomorphize God into our image. And why all the drama, God? So, you know, you're limited to a few hundred words. So I had to try to fit in a whole lot of stuff, which, once again, I said, no one probably ever saw. And if they did, they probably don't get it. But there are so many creatures on this earth. And yet we anthropomorphize God, you know, into being some type of human or caring about humans. And it's just, I mean, I know why we want to do it. You know, I know why we want to do it. But if we think about how many animals preceded humans, and we think about how many animals will live longer than humans after humans are gone from this earth, if that ever does happen, and it could very well happen, there are a lot more animals that are a lot more resilient than we are, especially the microorganisms. Look at the extremophiles, the organisms that live in volcanoes, in volcanic water and stuff like that. Superheated water, super cold organisms thriving, undersea plants that are almost in complete darkness, still photosynthesizing under the frozen icebergs and stuff like that. That is a willingness to survive. If you were dumped into those situations, the skin would be boiled off your bones, or you would be frozen, you know, solid in no time at all. Your blood would not be able to flow through your body. Yet these little worm things and single cell organisms and extremophile organisms thrive in these places, in vents at the ocean floor. Look at the sea creatures that we'd never see if it wasn't for you know, these newer technologies and scubas and these movements to scan the ocean, which we know like 1% of or something like that. It's unfathomable. All this wonderful stuff around us, and yet we get hung up on Jesus Christ, this shit in the Bible. It's just shit. I mean, it's not even well written, some of this stuff. And other stuff, the lyrics of Solomon, I mean, God, you want to talk about you know, porn, holy, dirty prose, how about that? You know, read some of those poems, I continue here, pardon me. The Council of Nicaea was right in trying to keep John's writings out of the Bible, because that's what this whole rapture comes from, that one line in John's, right? Not John, the one that's associated with the John, the nut, the hashish person. I don't know. Writings out of the Bible. And then because he states about a sweeping up into the clouds once in his writings, which are also rife with giant dragon talk, with many heads, mid-air weddings, wars using bow and arrows, it gets spun into an entire rapture event. Some best-selling books, and may have influenced the United States foreign policy. I mean, this is where all these crazy Bush stuff, and I'm talking about senior and junior, I just call him junior, I'm talking about senior Bush and W. Bush, both may have based policy in Israel on some of this crap. I conclude my YouTube post. It surely is the end of sanity. I just do not know how we can live in 2010, just a few weeks away, and surrounded by the innovations, the technologies, the end of so many diseases and stuff like that, which, by the way, the Savior was supposed to end all diseases with his return. And if you don't believe that he returned already, then what was he doing here on Earth? And what about when he came back from the dead and appeared to people? Now we're going on his third return? Is that what we're still waiting for, his third return? It's not even Swiss cheese. I mean, this is... I want to say it has more holes than Swiss cheese. It's not even Swiss cheese. I don't know what has more holes in this. A head of a froth of your beer, I think. But let's not draw out our saviors. Let's also remember that the returning, that it's very, you know, which Jesus? That's a good question to always ask. Which Jesus? If we do want to talk about the messianic prophecies, the Messiah, and we want to talk about who is the Messiah. Well, you could say Jesus, but 4 years before Jesus, Judas, son of Hezekiah, was claimed and thought by many to be the Messiah. Okay, the Christ. Also, in 4 years before the birth of when Jesus was supposed to be born, Simon of Periah was also believed to be the Messiah, the Messianic prophet, the Savior, the derived from the lineage of David to come back and save us all. Also in 4 BCE was a very popular time. Anthrogenes, the shepherd, I might be totally butchering these names. He was also thought to be 6 years after when Jesus was only six. The character of Jesus was only six. Judas the Galilean was thought to be the Messiah. 28, when Jesus was 28, John the Baptist was thought to be the Messiah. Jesus, of course, came in when he was 30. Jesus of Nazareth. 36, the Samaritan prophet was thought to be the Messiah. 44, Herod of Agrippa. 45, Thaddeus. 52, the Egyptian prophet. 59, the anonymous prophet. And on and on and on to medieval messiahs, as well as up to very recently, 1902 to 1994, Menachem Mendel. Schneerson, if you know about this fella, some people still believe, even though he died in 1994, his followers still believe that he was the Messiah and that he's just Up With God now, just, you know, planning some other stuff. So check out, you know, Schneerson. You might have already heard this word if you've listened to other shows, especially Bob Price has brought him up a time or two, and definitely on the Infidel Guy. So, you know, it's a very important not to, what does that mean? And Jesus wasn't the Messiah if all these other people claim to be Messiah and people believe that he were? No, of course not. I'm just saying that you cannot remove the organism from the environment. You have to look at the background. You can't just have a foreground in a vacuum with nothing. There's a background, there's a foreground, and they are intertwined. And let's look at what the Messianic prophet needed to fulfill. He needed to be the offspring of Eve. Now, was Jesus the offspring of Eve? I thought that Jesus was the Son of God, and you know, once again, which Jesus? He needed to be a descendant of Abraham. He needed to be a descendant of Judah, a descendant of David. And you know, as well as I do, if you read the Bible, there is a great deal of lineage trying to trace his ancestry back to David through Joseph. if his mother was a virgin, how is he related to Joseph again? And if his father was God and it was an immaculate conception, how is he related to David once again? I have no clue how any of that could be rectified. Great kings will pay homage to him. Great kings will? Why don't we have any of the great kings? Now, there's history of the kings during his era. Why is it we don't have any record of the great kings paying homage to Jesus? In fact, there's no accounts of Jesus, as I mentioned before, outside of Christology, outside of the Bible, the Gospels and the Epistles. There's no independent corroboration of this Jesus character at all. And now, we've already examined, you know, there is of Asclepius, that just shot into my mind when I was trying to think of other people's names, which Asclepius did a lot of the same type of gimmicks that Jesus did as far as healing. I think Asclepius healed the person's eye. He was missing his eye. It was not even in the socket. It was gone. And he created a whole eye to fill his thing. And this was a guy that is verified by other people. Now, not verified that he healed the eyeball in a socket, but at least he was a real person and walked around. And once again, I know I don't know very much about this. I don't know. I don't really care to know. But I know that it was not just in the Asclepian worshipers that mentioned Asclepius. So, and once again, we've examined all the evidence of a historical Jesus at length in another Wiggly World show. So I direct you to that. They also said he would be buried with the rich. Buried with the rich. I don't know how that happened. Was the tomb rich? I don't know. Are there rich people in a tomb? Born in Bethlehem. Called Emmanuel. Well, I don't know a lot. I don't see anyone calling Emmanuel. Did he deliver and save all the Jewish people and bring them to paradise? That is what he was to have done. Did the Jews eat their fill in the days of the Messiah? Did they go unhungry? There were no starving Jews at his time. Did he rebuild Israel, which he was to do? And did he destroy the wicked? Cast out evil spirits. That's not the Jesus I know. I mean, I only know what you know, probably, what I see on Davy and Goliath. And what the preachers tell me on televangelists and stuff like that. Doesn't sound like he fulfilled any of those. And, you know, that's why we have to get into these second coming businesses. There's no second coming mentioned in the Bible. Everything that John is talking about with the whole business about the apocalypse, it's just apocryphal writing. It's talking about the first coming of Jesus. You know, there's little tidbits that people pick up on, and they think this is what means that he's going to come again. But most of that, like, is post-changed or misinterpretations or whatever. Because, oh, you know what? He didn't do all these messianic things. And if we do want him to be the Messiah, then, you know, I guess he has to be in the future. He's not going to do it now. He's not going to do it before some of those among you do not taste the grave. He's actually going to do it in an undisclosed future. Soon, though. Definitely not 2,000 years away from now. Soon. Oh, whoops. Let's get back into the letters now, since I diverged on that. Hey, Wig Patty Bates. Been a while. Congrats on the wedding. Real happy for you. Did you catch the BBC dramatization of the Sinclair and Acorn story, Microman, a few weeks ago? No, I did not, but then I immediately went and downloaded and watched it. It was a wonderful nostalgia trip of a kind that there at the time, and I thought you would like it. Yes, it's about the battle between the Sinclair computer and the Acorn computer. And man, it's heavily dramatized. It's all done by actors pretending to be Sinclair and the Acorn dude, Sinclair's pal, that eventually went and formed his own company. But really, really neat view on something I was not aware of, and that is, you know, England, Britain's, Europe's vie for personal home computing. So it was really cool. I enjoyed that, and it's worth a watch. Microman. Now I think that the majority of it is completely fiction, but it's definitely based on a true story, based on real happenings. So and he also says, hope all is well with you and you are enjoying marriage. I was fascinated to hear about the DNA tracing program you were talking about a few weeks ago. Yes, Chizzy did that. She got her results. I'm definitely signing up for that bad boy. As a guy from Northern Ireland who is past sick of people asking me if I consider myself Irish or British, I can now answer African. I will even have the documents to prove it. Sign me up, buddy. Thanks, pal. Now, I hope that that's open to you. Yeah, I mentioned that the National Geographic Society has the genographic project, and this is to trace not necessarily who your ancestors were, or what country they came from, or anything like that, but what you share in common in the human genome with the migratory paths of your ancestors. How they got to where you are now. And your involvement in this helps also refine these pathways for you know, like where you ended up. So all this goes in and it helps trace a nice route on how we all came out of Africa. So it's very, very cool stuff. Very good. Very, very good. Yep. And I did the hilarious rendition of the racist outside of my home, which for some reason Maverick thought I was imitating him. I said I'm doing a racist outside of my home, and then he put himself in that position for some reason. But then I said, why don't you all go back to where I came from? that's really cool. I hope that you take advantage of that, Patty Bates. And I hope to have Chiz on here to talk about those results as well. Because, I haven't even heard too much about it. I mean, she got it and she was happy and she looked at it and like that. But it's a painless process. You send away your $100 and you scrape your cheek like 8 hours apart and put it in the mail and whammo. About a month or so later, you'll find out all the stuff online. Just sign in and you can look at a map of all the stuff happening. And I also have a message here from Tim that I hope to get Chiz involved with here, since it really involves family and things like that. So I hope to be able to do that over this weekend. That's the plan. That's my plan. I'm I'm a big fan of your ingenious podcast. I want to congratulate you on your marriage to one of the best ladies ever, Chizzy. I recently started a new podcast that can be found on iTunes, TPS Radio, at gmail.com, right arrow, Culture Shock. I am a rookie podcaster. Oh, so you can find him in the iTunes under the TPS Radio at gmail.com, right arrow, Culture Shock. I am a rookie podcaster who, like every new podcaster, has problems and needs help from a brilliant and veteran podcaster like you to make my podcast more interesting and help keep people interested. Could I please get some of your expert advice, Maverick? No, I have no advice. It's hard to get people interested. I have no idea. If I knew how to do that, I'd be successful at this. But definitely a plug away. Yeah, this one is... let me see. Oh, it's from Wrestling Man. Hey, how about that? November 12th. I'm so late on these things. Advice to the singles. Hi, Wiggly. First off, I would like to say congrats on your recent marriage to Chiz. I know that we had talked on Xbox 360 about the wedding. Yeah, we played one versus 100,000 or whatever it's called. One versus 1,000. That was pretty fun wedding. But still, man, you're married. She's a keeper. Anyways, I wanted to do something different here and sort of give advice to all single people when trying to pick up men or women. Now, some of these stories don't involve me, but may involve some people I have known in the past. But today's story does involve me, lol. So anyway, here we go. Spelled correctly anyway. About 5 years ago, I was doing a summer program to get me prepped for college. I usually take a school bus to get there. And no, people, not the short bus, so don't bother asking questions about that. Anyway, there was this cute-looking girl that rode the bus with me every day to and from school. So one day, I decided to give her my home number. A couple of days later, she gave me her cell phone and asked me for my cell phone number. Only problem was I didn't know my cell phone number. So I had to call my dad, who was at home when I'm still on the bus, and tell me my cell phone number so I can give the number to the girl. Why didn't you just call the girl with your cell phone? And then she would have seen your number pop up. Even though that was silly, I'm glad to say that we are friends and that one moment has not ruined my life. That's good. The moral of the story here, kids, according to Wrestling Man, is if you're trying to get a number from a hot chick or a cute boy, you better remember your phone number or else you will feel pretty damn embarrassed. Well, I also think every phone has a way you can view your number. But I don't know that combination. I don't know. Well, that does it from now. I'll be back with more stories for the single people of the world. Wrestling Man. P.S. I cannot type today for some reason. Damn. Okay. Well, you typed. That's it for the letters. Let me just think a little bit about what I want to cover on. I talked a lot today about. I sort of just want to set some groundwork for looking into this Jesus fella. And seriously examining a case for a historical Jesus. As I mentioned before, I've seen no evidence yet provided for a historical Jesus. A historical Jesus, I've just simply seen no evidence outside of Christology that shows that there ever was a person named Jesus that was this person written about in the Bible. We run into plenty of problems. Before we even, there's nothing that I've seen that supports this character or, you know, like a recording of Herod killing the firstborn male children. This is simply a reenactment of the stories about Moses. There's no independent recording of the 500 dead people that arose from their graves when Jesus, and the earthquake that happened when and time stopping when Jesus gasped his last breath on the cross. There's nothing. There's no way to comfortably align any census that would have forced Joseph to have to go to Bethlehem. There were census in around that time, but not for many years after Jesus, well, I think, was supposed to have been dead. And none where they could find a census where it made you uproot yourself from where you were currently living to go, you know, to where you were born to take the census. That was also thrown in there to fulfill these preconceived ideas that the messianic that the Messiah would come from Bethlehem. So that's why that story had to be put in there. And there's no record of this census that supposedly had to lead Joseph back there. But let me think about where else I want to go with this. Well, I'm not going to go into too much. I think it would be wise to just lay a little bit of groundwork of what I'm looking at. I'm not fully competent in it either. But I do know that I would like to probably talk about Mithraism a little bit here. I definitely want to talk about Paul because we are talking about the New Testament. And as I mentioned, there were the epistles and there were the gospels. And the epistles are people that never met Jesus. They spoke about him and they were delivered the news about Jesus. They were delivered the news about God. And it's very important to read how things are worded and very important to understand the etymology of some of the translations here between Lord and God and things really referring to the Son and to Jesus and things like this. Because they're very important in the meaning that you get out of the words from the epistles. Because everything that Paul says that he gets everything from the scriptures, from the mysteries of God. He gets it right from God himself about all the going-ons about the Son. And the Son is the Redeemer. He is the pathway. But he has everything inspired either through mystery, the mystery of God, or through the scriptures, by quoting scriptures and such like that. And then comes to his own conclusions. And all his teachings that he says about things like marriage and different things like this, he gets from God, the scriptures and the mysteries. He doesn't get them from the teachings of Jesus passed down from the teacher Jesus. And you can read your Bible and read through all of Paul's works, which is he has accredited to more of the New Testament than any other author. In fact, more of anything in the Bible is written by, accredited to Paul. Now, how much did he write? Who knows? But that, you know, that's still up for scholars to determine. But he's definitely accredited to more passage in the Bible. Now, what you also need to realize about the epistles is these are from letters, and these are from formal letters written to other Christians. So this is a compilation of formal letters, and these formal letters were taken quite seriously and quite formally. And this includes the epistle of, well, it definitely includes all of Paul's writings, the epistles to the Hebrews, the epistles to the Romans, as we mentioned before, the Apocalypse of John. There's also, I think, two epistles of John. Timothy, and off the top of my head, that's all I could think of right now, but I'm sure there's more in there. And then the Gospels are supposed to be the ones written by people that had firsthand experience with Jesus. You know, Mark, Matthew, Luke is supposedly have compiled things about people that were the direct disciples of Jesus. And then the other Gospels were just written by people that never met Jesus, were not his direct disciples. I think I my Luke. Yeah, I think that's how that went. I could be a little bit unclear on that. But that's because I'm more interested right now. I'm more concerned with just sending a little bit of beliefs that were popular at the time, popular preceding the time of Paul. Because Paul's our main player, and I've talked about this before, and I've said it many, many times before. I hope everyone agrees that the reason that we have Christianity is because of Paul. Jesus never took the time to write anything down, that's for sure. He didn't feel it was important or whatever. Or who knows? It's only conjecture at this point. But he never decided to write anything down, give us any laws, do anything really that could really be impact. I mean, who knows why? He's too lazy. I don't know. It's all up to conjecture. There's nothing written about why Jesus never wrote anything. So, you know, that itself is it's something that people never consider. You know, they consider the Bible as an inspired word of God. God didn't write anything in it. Jesus never wrote anything in it. He inspired other people. Once again, the use of messiahs for an omnipotent God is just baffling to me. He can do, it's not like it's a chore. He's got unlimited power, okay? Unlimited power, unlimited energy. It's not like, oh, it's a waste of my time to, talk to these people I made. He's got unlimited time. It can't be a waste for him. For any type of omnipotent being to have to use any type of mouthpieces, televangelists, prophets, you name it. Dumb. But to sort of set groundwork for how could Paul have written about the Last Supper? How could Paul have written about Jesus dying on a cross, being sacrificed, being murdered? Number one, you know, how can he write about these things if Jesus wasn't a real person? Because in the Gospels, then we read later on, remember the Gospels didn't come around until, you know, after Paul started writing 30 years after Christ was already supposed to have been off this earth. And then the rest came after that, which seems kind of odd. I mean, how would, you know, why wouldn't people that were his partners write about him while they were his partners, and then the historical should come first, and then the mythical later after he ascended and, you know, showed himself to different people. But so how could, because Paul does write about a supper, a ceremony, and he also writes about dying on a cross. And how could that be? Now, he never says where he was crucified. He never says on Mount Sinai, you know, he never says that the Romans, and remember, Romans, that means Italians. The Italians killed Christ. Why is there so much animosity towards the Jews when it was the Italians that killed Jesus? And now we can get into the fact that Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it. He says, this is not on me, this is on you. And once again, this is just, you know, pushing scapegoats around, trying to alienate the people you want to alienate and target them and make them the enemy and stuff like that. But the truth is that, you know, there's nothing that would have in this Jesus story. If you are the ruler of a whole giant city, why are you going to listen to a bunch of people that want you to kill somebody on the Sabbath day? You know, it's silly. It's silly stuff. But, you know, you have to try to connect these dots. You draw yourself into a corner and you have to try to paint your way out of it somehow with a magic paint roller. But that notwithstanding, Paul doesn't write about that. He writes about the evil ones, the ones in power, and things like this. Now, you can infer that he's talking about people. But we, in order to try to figure out what he's really talking about here, we have to look at the words that he uses. And we also have to look at not only the etymology of those words, or the meaning of those words, but we have to use look at when he uses those same words in other parts of the Bible. And just off the top of my head, the one word that he used, paradidomi, and now I'm all of a sudden Italian, so it might not even be pronounced that way, paradidomi, probably, is a Greek verb for betrayed or arrested. But what it actually literally means is delivered up or handed over. Like a delivered up, it's most commonly used with martyrdom, according to Earl Doherty. And I don't have the book that I recommended to you, which is Jesus, Neither God Nor Man, The Case for a Mythical Jesus. I have the Jesus Puzzle, which preceded it by several years. So you can get a much better book by getting the update of this, Jesus, Neither God Nor Man, The Case for a Mythical Jesus. And delivered up to the custody of judgment, I'll just read right from it, which could include execution in the gospel context. It can take on a figurative meaning of arrest or betrayal, as in Mark 14:21, but in Paul, there's no need to see it as that way. He uses the same verb in Romans 8:32. He, God, did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for us all. Now there, you would not say God arrested and put into custody his son, or Jesus, you would take that to mean that he delivered him up. So we have to keep our eye on that. We also have to keep an eye on how did people treat their heroes? How did people treat their gods at that time? One of the interesting things is that we see the Apostle Paul mention in his letter to the Corinthian church. He writes, I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up in the third heaven. Whether it was in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And I know that this man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, but God knows, was caught up to paradise. He heard inexpressible things, things that man is not permitted to tell. And that's in 2 Corinthians 12:2-4. So in this passage, we're to infer that there are multiple levels to heaven. And in fact, this third level of heaven is paradise. But at that time, the common this is all from much of this is from Platonic Plato, from Plato's works. In fact, boy, just the whole way that God is treated, and the concepts of a heaven and hell, and the concepts of a purgatory and things like this. This comes from Platonic rhetoric. Shockingly, I mean, if you study the works of Plato, then you can see a lot of this. And it's sort of like, wow, the Bible really wasn't in a vacuum. You know, there was a lot of these thoughts going on. In fact, in Judaism, you have seven heavens. Vilan, Rakia, Genesis 1:17. You have the first Vilan is in Isaiah 40:22. Shehaquim is in Psalms 78:23. Zebul, which is Isaiah 63:15, and in 1 Kings 8:13. Maan, which is in Deuteronomy 26:15 and Psalms 42:9. Makan, which is in 1 Kings 7:30 and Deuteronomy 28:12. And Araboth, the seventh heaven where Ophanim, the Seraphim, and the Hayoth, and the throne of the Lord are located in Araboth, the seventh heaven. Ophan is one of the class in the celestial beings called Ophanim, described in the Book of Enoch, with the cherubim, which is the angels, and seraphim, as never sleeping but watching or guarding the throne of God. So these cherubim, which have been iconized as these little babies with wings, but actually they're multi-headed beasts with, like, lions with wings and stuff like this, and also the seraphim. And the word ophan means wheel. So that's when Ezekiel sees the wheel and stuff like that. Is confused yet? Yes, there's many heavens. Islam has seven heavens. There are a lot of... There was very common beliefs that our earth was, of course, the lowest level. This is the level of the flesh. And then, you know, there's one level above that. And then as you go higher and higher and higher in levels, you become more spiritual and perfect and clean. Here, we are at this level of flesh and dirty and scum. And you eventually want to get all the way up to, you know, nicer layers of heaven. So many of these times when, and believe me, there were other gods that were lived in the domain of the higher heavens. But in order for them to be killed and to be these dying savior gods, they had to descend to lower levels where they would become fleshy, more fleshy. Now, they didn't have to come all the way down to earth. They could still be in a higher level of heaven that just had a little more flesh on it. And I know this must sound incredibly bizarre, but if you go to, like, Wikipedia, there's people writing about the seven heavens. There's people writing about the third heavens. This is known by people outside of a Wiggly World show. And it's known before I knew about it. Because I never really, you know, I've read it. I've read the above the firmament, below the firmament, you know, those levels of heavens. And I knew about, you know, Enoch and his visit to heaven and things like this, where he saw the stars and as I mentioned before, the stars. I love to mention it. The sun, the stars, and snowflakes, all in the same part of heaven, you know. It's amazing, you know, right next to each other. It's good stuff. But, you know, and I've talked about the domes and how people believed, you know, that you go to Olympus. I mean, even in our cartoons, Herc, Herc, hey Herc, hey Herc, of Hercules. You know, you go above the clouds and then there's a road leading up to Mount Olympus that's way above the clouds, and that's heaven. You know what I mean? We can watch it in Disney cartoons about Hercules. So, I mean, we can see these visions, and people actually believe that heavens were above some of these domes. They were physical places. Yes, they were places of the spirit, but the God's throne was there. He had to sit on a throne, and he sat in a chair made of gold, and a path of gold, roads. They needed roads. They need to drive around in spiritual places. These were physical places. They were also spiritual, but you know what I mean? Why can't people even question that? Why does God need to sit on a throne made of gold and have a road? Obviously for him and Jesus' horses, you know, that they're going to ride back on. Jesus is riding down on his horse. Will he have a bow and arrow? Will he have a sword? It depends on whose interpretation you believe. Some people believe that the first white horse with the guy and a bow and arrow is the Antichrist pretending to be like Jesus. Others believe that it is Jesus, you know. But the fact that he has to ride a horse, everyone glosses over that. If I was Jesus, I'd come in a giant robot. But if I was Jesus, I wouldn't need to do any of this drama. I'd just blink and it'd be... I wouldn't even blink. I wouldn't even have to do anything. I'm all powerful. Why would I have to do anything to make something happen? It would just happen. Everything would be perfect. None of this drama. No robots. How could you be a robot if you don't know things outside your scope of knowing to be good or bad or indifferent? You can have the complete ability to make the decisions and all of them be right, and you still have the freedom to make those choices because you don't know that there are wrong choices. So you're not a robot. You're just a happy person that can't make any wrong decisions and fine with that because you don't know that there are bad decisions to make. That is not taking away your freedom, the inability to make bad decisions, if you are not aware that those bad decisions exist. There's plenty of stuff that you and I don't know right now. And we don't know that we don't know it. And we're perfectly fine in our oblivion to it, in our ignorance to it. We don't know we don't know something. So we're cool with that. It doesn't keep us up at night. It doesn't make us think that we can't decide on things. If I was a god, I would implement the ability that we cannot make wrong decisions. Each decision leads to tulips and daisies and happiness and flowers and fun time and having a good time and being okay and being content. You know, we don't have to fucking ejaculate every time we make a good decision, but we could be at least be content, you know? And that's not being like, I didn't even get to talk about V. I love this show. I want to talk about the new V in 2009. I want to talk about the new shows I've been watching and that have been recommended to me. And talk about Flashback, Flash Forward. I love to call it Flashback. I changed my mind about Flash Forward. I'm really loving it. Now I got to wait like the rest of you plebanoids. Like everybody else. I like to just wait until the series is done, has its last episode, and then I watch the whole thing from start to finish. Why did I listen to anybody? But I really am enjoying that. But I'll tell you what, I'm enjoying V a lot more, and in completely different ways. I mean, everything I said about Flash Forward still stands on how I feel about some of the sensationalism and stuff like that. But V is doing it pretty good. I'm pretty good. I'm completely over the fact that, you know, they're humanoid looking. And I remember what the original V was. It was very hokey. And I'm so thankful that, like, two of the leads in this show now are women. So that's great. And I'm glad that they got rid of, and I'm glad that they threw a little bone in, I think episode 2, you could see some shadowy figures. They're wearing the old 1970s V outfit, the red jumpsuit gimmick with the weird collar, with the 1980s style collar. That's cool. And I'm glad that all the people don't look alike, you know, that's kind of neat. So I'm happy with what they hung on to from the old V, and I'm definitely glad that they got away from most of that. And I also, like I said, I did revisit the final episode of Battlestar. I want to really talk about that. I promise I'm going to do that next episode. I'll talk more about television. Let me finish with this. I think I've already tried to just set up a little bit. It, of course, needs more research by yourself, if you so to choose to do that, and more research by myself. I'm... you know, have a lot more to research in this. But I would like to leave you with this, and this might take a little while. What are we coming on? 3 hours with this show? No. This would only be... Hold on a second. I gotta stop this, because you know what? Sometimes this new app, this new Wire Pro, makes me very nervous. Well, I hope that all my stuff is there. I don't know what hour we're on, because it's supposed to save every hour. And unless I stop this, I can't tell. let me end with this. I'm going to read right from Mithras, the Secret God, by M.J. Vermaseren, London, 1963. I hope he doesn't mind. This is on Mithraism, because it's going to be a lot easier than me reading from the books about Mithras. After the arduous bull... Now, if you don't know who Mithra is, he fought a bull. Same thing happened with Yeah. Wow. I am losing it. The precursor to Hercules. Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh also fought a bull. The Lord of the... How did that happen? I'm losing it. I'm losing it. Sorry. I'm going downhill, everyone. Inanna. Daughter. I have to do my song. She was very upset with Gilgamesh because he rejected her coming ons and sent the bull of heaven to fight Gilgamesh. Well, Mithra also fought a bull. And after his arduous bull hunt and the miracle of the bull slain, Mithras completes his stay on earth by banqueting with Sol of the flesh of the bull. Off the flesh of the bull. So him and Sol are eating the flesh of the bull. This is a sacred meal. Many, many gods, man gods, saviors, and you know, just gods people worshipped, had a sacred meal associated with them. And Mithras is not unique in this. Definitely Isis and Osiris and Attis and those gods also had meals. As already remarked, the paintings at Dura Europhos include two attendants dressed as torchbearers who carry the dead bull on a pole slung between their shoulders. The meal takes place in a cave where Mithras, in his Persian robes, reclines or sits with, I think that should be sits, with Sol behind a table. The relationship between the two gods is clearly a friendly one, as Mithras is sometimes seen with his arm round his companion's shoulder. Very much like Thomas in the Last Supper. Now, anyone also that knows about how people would have eaten around that Hellenistic period, they would have most likely reclined and had a very, very short table which meals were served on. This was quite common for around the time. It wouldn't have been like Da Vinci's picture at all, or how we sit around a table on high chairs. Most people reclined during this period and around that area when they ate. So this fits right in with Mithras doing this. And how he's affectionate with his pal Saul, and how Jesus was affectionate towards Thomas is just a little analogy I just drew right here. That's what it sounds like to me. Anyway, the most usual expression discernible in these pictures, however, is one of profound religious feeling, which can be seen in all the representations of highly exalted events, as, for example, in the painting of Dura Europhos, figure 20. The divine meal is more frequently portrayed than any other scene except the bull slain, and sometimes later appears on the front of a relief which portrays the meal on its reverse. So these are two very important pieces that usually appear together. The slaying of the bull, the sacrifice of the bull, the sacred bull, and the meal in the honor of this event. In such cases, the relief, and I added all that, in the cases of relief, it was mounted on the pivot so that during the ceremonies, the worshipper's attention could be drawn to one scene or the other by rotating the slab. Now, this is not Wiggly talking about Mithraism. These are people that believed in Mithras, okay? They did these ceremonies. Now, ceremonies and, belief and... are not mutually exclusive. You do not have to believe that all this stuff is true to take part in a service or a ceremony. You do it all the time. You know, if you celebrate Christmas, you're celebrating, Osiris. You're celebrating Yule log from, Germany and Norse and other all these other types of things. You take part in I was going to say Friday, and then I couldn't remember what Fry is based on. You know, I know Saturday is Saturnalia. Sunday, if you go to Midnight Mass, you're definitely not celebrating anything to do with Jesus. You're celebrating, you know, events that date further back to pagan gods and stuff like that. Definitely the solstice, you know, on Christmas. So, yeah. Cripes, it's loud. So, you know, so how much people believed and felt in their spirit, you know, that's all debatable. That's all an individual feeling. I'm not speaking about that, but I'm telling you that this was things that people believed, you know, they were not exclusive clubs though. That's what made Christianity succeed among many other things. It's all little bits that go into the success of Christianity. Being a monotheistic religion really helps you. People keep interesting, people keep it going on because they're saying there's only one way. You know, these other mystery religions and cults and sects and just other religions were not exclusive. You could worship many different gods. That was fine, you know. That was cool. It's no problem. And whatever gets you closer to this community, taking part in a ceremony and, you know, having a good time and being thankful for food and things like this. Let's continue here. The meal can even be regarded as an event which takes place solely on a divine level between the two gods, Sol and Mithras. But the believers, according to certain texts, imitated the example of their deity during the ritual. Therefore, certain representations are of a mixed nature, with the initiates themselves taking part in the meal as attendants on the gods. The example and imitation of the divine meal are woven into a single whole. The third variant of the scene represents initiates partaking of the meal alone. So this is very important, as pointed out by this fella here. This meal, this slaying, might have been completely all taking place on a spiritual plane. And this, once again, shows that at that time, and I think Mithras was 10 or 20 years before Christ. I'll look that up. Before he was supposed to be born, but I'll look that up to be certain on that. That's just off, you know, my scattered memory right now. In order to understand the ritual of this repast, we must first consider the magnificent painting on the side wall behind the left-hand bench in the Aventine Mithraeum. Mithras Museum, I guess. Mithraeum or something like that. Or Church of Mithras, I don't know. This painting dates from AD 220. Oops! Yeah. Missed it by a few hundred years. That's when this painting took place. And let's find out. In a dark vaulted grotto, it is only by the golden glow of candlelight Sol and Mithras are reclining on a couch. Before them, there is a small table. So this also shows that, you know, Mithraism continued at least 220 years, 3rd century. And we know that a lot of the Bible was coming together 2nd and 3rd century and 4th century and 5th century. Let's continue on here. Gestures of ardent enthusiasm. His long golden locks are surrounded. Let's see here. Sol and Mithras are reclining on a couch. Before them is a small table. Sol, clad in a long red garment with a yellow belt, holds a globe in his left hand and raises his right hand in a gesture of ardent enthusiasm. His long golden locks are surrounded by a rayed nimbus. That's a halo, everybody. And he is gazing ecstatically upwards into the heavens. Mithras is in his red cloak and Phrygian cap. is sitting beside him and has put his right hand on Sol's shoulder. On each side stands an attendant. One of them keeps the gods provided with drink. The other one, other wearing a raven mask, offers an oval plate with food. He is in an initiate of the raven grade. Eight other young men, all lions, according to the inscription, bring gifts. They carry bread and a mixing bowl, a cock and a bundle of tapers. Nowhere else is the Mithric meal portrayed in such detail. The two gods have a moment joined their earthly followers, who in their turn pay homage to their distinguished guest. In this way, the divine presence is manifested while the initiates celebrate the mysteries and follow their example. So what this is taking of the bread, taking of drinking of the blood, and the gods are then with them when they do this ritual. I don't know if that sounds familiar, like happening every Sunday. Who during this solemn nights would be wearing the same clothes as Mithras and Sol were before them and are furnished with the same attributes. In the Santa Prisca Mithrium, a separate bench is made for these two persons to recline upon during the celebration of the meal. So they do the same, they go through the same ritualistic, symbolic meal as, say, a Catholic priest would when he's, you know, taking the cup of blood and breaking the bread. And I thought Mithras, they drank beer and bread. The lower grade, particularly the ravens, are in attendance to supply them with food and drink. And that's all I'll read from that, I think. I actually think this part is also interesting. Adura Europus. I don't know why I can't say it. I don't know why if I'm saying it right. We have already seen that the gods receiving small pieces of meat skewered on a spit. In the representation of the repast in the Aventine Mithraeum, a lion is carrying a cake in a glass dish. I know that cake was a big favorite of gods as well. From the refuse pits, which are often discovered close to Mithraic sites, and the bones of bulls, boars, sheep, and birds have been found. And the natural deduction is that normally the bull's flesh was consumed and its blood drunk. However, if no bull was available or if the animal was too costly, one either had to be content with the flesh of another animal, generally smaller domesticated breeds, or else with bread and fish as substitutes for meat, and wine for blood. That bread and water were used, now this is a quote, that bread and water were used in the mysteries by the initiates of Mithras that we know, or we can get to know, writes Justin, one of the early church fathers. He also had an epistle of Justin, I believe. He is careful to use the word water and not wine, although there is certain evidence for the use of wine in the Mithraeum at Dura Europus. The expenses of the community are scratched on the wall. The expenses of the community are scratched on the walls. And the head of the list comes the charges for meats and wine. The bunch of grapes held in Sol's hands at Hederheim points to the same direction. One of the attendants on the relief from Cape Bringa is emptying a jug into a large bowl, while the other has dropped his torch on the ground and is offering Sol a dish with what appears to be loaves of bread on it. And checking on those dates, Mithra precedes the Christ myth by at least 600 years. Mithra is found in the Indian Vedic religions as Mitra, which is 3,500 years old. Much to the chagrin of Christians, there's been much evidence that shows that Mithraism was around before Christianity. For example, according to Plutarch, the Greek biographer and Neoplatonist, Platonist philosopher. The worship of Mithras was first absorbed by the Romans around 70 years BCE during Pompey's campaign against Sicilian pirates. Mithra can be found to have been worshipped throughout Europe, being that there are monuments to Mithra found everywhere from Scotland to India. And that's from angelfire.com/sci-fi/deadangelsrot/mithra.html. And so, you know, take that for what it is from the internet. But I'm sure if you look into Mithra, you're going to see dates ranging in between surely 500, at least 200 to 600 years BCE. And really, that's all I'm going to say about that. I mentioned a lot of things that I could riff on, like the bull and like the power transferred by that and what it all meant and everything else. But there's plenty of places for me to go. But I got to tell you, I'm losing it. I'm losing my voice and I'm losing my mind. I'm very hungry. And as soon as Chiz gets back from her hairdo, we're going to go to Wegmans probably. So I'm going to mix this out. I'm going to see how quickly I can get this. I'm probably going to not even be done with my metadata and already have exported this out of Logic. I cannot wait. Thank you all for your support. I could not be here without you. I do value our friendships, and I look forward to talking about television shows, which are so important to us. But, you know, a lot of fun on the next episode, and perhaps we'll get more into this. And, you know, I apologize for my slow to read. This today is very bad. I had a hard time seeing. So I hope that you bore with me and I didn't bore you too much. Ooh, and I want to talk about music as well. So I have a whole life's worth of shows ready for you. And we'll begin that journey next time I speaks with you. Stay tuned for new episodes of the thing I do, the Shakara Podcast, a go. Stay tuned for We Talk Games. And 2010 should be an interesting media year. I have a feeling I've been kicking some things around, and I have a feeling that things are going to happen in 2010. I was going to leave you with a song from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com, or as it's now called, Music Alley. Music Alley, MusicAlley, .com. Check it out. That's where Trapdoors, you can play all my Trapdoor songs as long as you become a member of this. It's completely free. You can play all the stuff for free. Just add it to your playlist. Then you can go in and download it. It's only, you have to sign up as a podcaster, or you can sign up as another musician if that's what you are and share your music on there. And then what you do is after you add it to your playlist and you download it, as soon as you play it on your show, you just go back in there, you look at your playlist, and you click on, I played this on my show, and you can enter the name of the show, and then that way, I know that you played me on your show, and then I can promote your show, I can listen to your show, and I get props for you playing my stuff. And it's win-win-win all around for everybody involved with this, and once again, 100% free. So check it out, musicalley.com. I was going to play something by Bad Religion. I was shocked that they're still around, still going, and it's great. And I don't know if it's the Bad Religion I remember from when I was younger, but I think it is. I don't know, nothing really stroked my boat. So I'm gonna play Wednesday, which has really nothing to do with today's show at all. But I'm gonna play a song by Wednesday, Wensday. Alice Cooper once said of her, "The other girl next door, this sultry singer-songwriter, has done a cover of Only Women Bleed, authorized by Alice Cooper." And since I'm a big Alice Cooper mark, and she is pretty good-looking as well, I'm going to play this. So I'm Wiggly. Thanks for joining me, A Wiggly World.
Man's got his woman to take his seed. He's got the power. She's got the need. She spends her life through pleasing up her man. She feeds him dinner or anything she can. She cries alone at night too often. He smokes and drinks and don't come home at all. Only women bleed. Only women bleed. Only women. Smoke.